All right.
Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales.
All right. Hello, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We welcome you to the show. We're here until 4 a.m. as we continue. I'm Nick DiGilio, your host. Tom Hush is my producer, and we'll be here all morning long till 4 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We'd love to hear from you. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Stay connected with us on our Facebook page, too. You can just go to facebook.com/Nick D Show and download our podcasts. It's real easy for you to do that. You just go to iTunes, you go to WGNradio.com, subscribe to the podcast. Every single second of every single show is podcast. If you can't listen live in the middle of the night into the early morning, listen at your leisure, bro. And subscribe, it's free. And there you go. All right. It is a Tuesday morning, which means two for Tuesday. You made two for Tuesday. Two for Tuesday is this. Every morning on the show and every night slash morning of the show, you, the listener, programs the music that we're going to hear when we come in and out of commercials and the news. And it's your requests. It's up to you to see what we're going to be playing. And the theme on Tuesday mornings is, and it will be Tuesday morning in about 50 minutes. So, and it is two for Tuesday, the classic two for Tuesday, which means that it's one artist, two songs. You pick them. We play them. So one artist, two songs, two for Tuesday. And those are that's the theme of this morning's music bumps that we will be listening to coming back from break and the news. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for those requests and more. Coming up on the show in just a couple of minutes, our old friend, one of my heroes, Dick DiBartolo, is here. Dick is a former writer of from Mad Magazine. He was referred to as Mad's maddest writer. He also wrote questions for the game show Match Game, created characters like Dumb Dora and Fat Frida and all those things. So he was part of the absolute classic 70s Match Game that I watch like every morning in reruns. But he is also known as the Gizwiz. And you can check him out at gizwiz.tv. He is a gadget and gizmo freak and loves that and has been covering this stuff for years. And he's got a whole bunch of new gadgets and gizmos that he's going to tell us about. And the great Dick DiBartolo, he'll be joining us. Also, coming up, we're going to check in with Daily Mail Australia. There's some crazy weather going on in Australia right now. And this is after all of these devastating wildfires that have happened in Australia. They've got like winds that are ripping the roof off of shopping centers. There's freak storms striking through Australia. There's hail, dust, flash floods, damage all over the place. Australia's been going through a really, really, really rough time. So we want to get a report from there. The editor at the Daily Mail Australia, Barclay Crawford, is going to join us just to talk about it and see what's going on and how people are feeling in Australia and what's the future and how they're dealing with what they're going through right now. So we'll check in with him a little bit later on. And then live in studio, Paul Farivar is going to join us. He is a stand-up comedian who is also a lawyer. And he has this show called Everyone's a Lawyer. And they do it on Sunday night. It'll be Sunday, January 26th at 7 o'clock, and it's at the Laugh Factory. Everyone's a lawyer. And basically, they turn into lawyers to discuss and argue real-life legal issues and more, but it's also a comedy show. We're going to play a little bit of that. We'll play a little point counterpoint with him and play a little Everybody's a Lawyer. Give you an example of what Paul does with his show. So that's coming up as well. It is it's DJ today on the 20th is National DJ Day. So we're going to talk about some of the best radio jocks of all time. And we are celebrating, if you want to celebrate it, 100 years of the Ponzi scheme. We'll tell you about that, the 100 years of the Ponzi scheme and some of the biggest scams in history. And we might be able to get to the real demands made by celebrities behind the scenes. They get a little bossy. So that is all happening on the show this morning as we continue 312-981-7200. And let's officially say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing great, Nick. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm actually very excited about tomorrow night's game, Hawks game, against Florida because Quenneville's going to be back.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That's going to be huge.
And back in the UC, and I guarantee you he's going to get like a 10-minute standing ovation.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you. And it's going to be so much fun to see that. I'm very excited about that.
Yeah, I think people will always... It was the same thing when Derrick Rose came back for the first time at a Bulls game. People were really just happy to see him.
Yeah.
And obviously, with both of them, things did not end super amicably, I would say. I know Q... I don't think Q was really happy with the decisions that were made.
No.
That, that led to him partying with the Blackhawks.
I would say not. The man brought us 3 cups in 6 years.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we talking about here?
But it's going to be nice to see him again. It will be really so nice to see him again.
I love the man. I think, you know, I always have. So, but anyway, that's going to be a fun thing. You can hear it right here, all of it, right here on 720 WGN. That would be tomorrow. After midnight, that would be tonight. A Tuesday night game. It's a 7:30 puck drop. So that should be fun. Curb Your Enthusiasm returned. Larry David in just rare form. It was really a strong comeback. 40 minutes. The episode was 40 minutes long, and it never wavered from being absolutely hilarious. I laughed out loud during the whole thing. It just makes me happy that Curb Your Enthusiasm is back, and it's back really strongly. So, if you didn't get to see it, watch it on your HBO on demand or streaming. But I highly recommend it because the first episode of Curb was just hilarious. So that's some of the stuff that's happening. Okay, stay with us. We are here. We're going to continue on 720 WGN, and we're going to continue with Dick DiBartolo, who is the host of The GizWiz at GizWiz.tv and former writer for Match Game, and he wrote for Mad Magazine for many, many, many years. And Dick is a great friend of the show, so we're going to jump in with a conversation with him. That's coming up, and it's continuing right now. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Skyline studio, continuing on this late Monday night. And we'll jump into the Tuesday morning. And so that, of course, is the theme song, the greatest game show theme song of all time from Match Game, the classic Match Game. One of our favorite guests ever is Dick DiBartolo. He wrote for Match Game. He wrote for Mad Magazine. And those were two seminal things that I loved when I was a kid growing up. And so this guy's a hero of mine. And he is also a gadget and gizmo freak who covers the world of gizmos and gadgets all over the place. And he's been doing that for years, too. Let's welcome Dick DiBartolo. Hi, Dick. How are you?
I'm super. How are you?
Oh, not bad at all. So tell everybody about yourself a little quick for people who might not have heard you.
Well, my God, after everything you've talked about. First of all, I'm still involved in Mad. They the new issue of Mad, the January-February issue, they decided that instead of it being a total reprint of old favorites, they would do the Mad 20, the 20 dumbest things of the previous year of 2019.
Okay.
So that issue, I'm in that issue. It's no longer on newsstands.
Right.
That is a big change. Actually, now you actually have to go to the printer to pick up your copy. They had to make little changes to save money. It's only available via subscription and at comic book stores, so not on newsstands.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to know that you're still writing for them, that they're still alive. I mean, Mad Magazine was a huge part of my childhood.
Oh, and me too. Actually, with the next issue, which I'm also in with a repeat, that is 55 years since I sold Mad my first piece back in high school.
Isn't that amazing?
I know. And I've been in every issue for 51 years. So it's also been a part of my life.
That is so great. That is just so great, man.
And you're coming up to 3 months in radio now. I want to promote what you do.
This is my 35th year at the station.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. In May, it'll be 35 years. Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's that pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy.
No, it's great. Yeah. It's super.
So,
and then as you said, I'm a gadget freak, and I tend to seek out the gadgets that not, you know, everybody wants to cover the iPhone, everybody wants to cover the new TV. So I kind of look around CES to find stuff that people might be stupid or might be great that people may have overlooked. So that's what I do at CES.
And, well, you went this year, correct?
Oh my gosh. I was one of the privileged few. There were only 165,000 of us who attended CES. I do believe there were 6,500 press. You know, some conventions just get 6,500 people. CES got 6,500 press people.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it is. Have you ever gone? It's huge.
I've not gone to the massive one in Vegas. When they used to tour around with it, they would bring it here to Chicago to the McCormick Place. And
there used to be a mid-year CES in Chicago.
Right, and I went to that several times back at the McCormick Place in the day, but I've not been to the one in Vegas. Yeah, it's got to be crazy. Hey, by the way, I just want to mention that I had A. Ashley Hoff on. Who wrote the book Match Game 101, and we talked a bit about you, and I love that book. You must like it too, right?
You know what? He hasn't sent me my copy yet.
Oh, okay.
That was my pay. I have to get on him. Oh, you know what? I think I do have to correct something that he said on your show about Gene's microphone.
Okay.
Remember, everybody talked about what was the deal with the long microphone.
The long, skinny microphone, yeah.
Yes, exactly. This is the backstage story. So during commercials, Ray Byrne loved going out into the audience to answer questions and make jokes.
Yeah.
And often he would ask a question, and someone deep in a row would answer it, or way in the back of the audience would answer it, and he'd have to have it repeated several times. And then one day he said, you know, is there some way I can get an extension for my microphone so that I can reach more people?
Right, right.
And that's when they came up with the long microphone.
The long microphone. This is Dick DiBartolo, everybody, a national treasure as far as I'm concerned. It's the Nick DiGilio Show on a Monday night, Tuesday morning. Tom Hush is your producer, and we're talking with Dick DiBartolo, the Giz Whiz, who talks about gizmos and writes for Mad Magazine, wrote for Match Game, classic Match Game, and so much great stuff. Dick DiBartolo is our guest. 312-981-7200.
Thank you. It's Tom Hush is new, right?
Yeah, well, he's now almost a year now. We're in March. In March it'll be a year, yeah.
Oh, okay, very good. No, because I said we do it by Skype, and he said, yes, but we don't do the picture part.
Right.
I said, you mean no video? He said, oh, yeah. Oh, you know the technical term. So, yeah. So.
Oh man!
Sorry, Tom.
So, in you know your experience with Mad Magazine, you've told the story several times about that they fooled you, they sent the envelope back, and all that stuff.
Yep.
It's a great story. Yep. And you talked about how you got involved with Match Game and how that happened, and how you guys basically changed what that show was. It was kind of a boring show, and then you guys invented the whole dumb Dora stuff, and And when, have you always been, because you've been a, you know, you've been part of gizwiz.biz and you know, and you've been a gadget freak for such, have you always been that way, even all for years?
Forever. And the funny thing is, Barbara Griff was a producer at Goodson Todman, and I think,
and
she
Goodson,
worked
by the way, Goodson,
the
just so people who might not know, Goodson Todman are the people responsible, Mark Goodson, Bill Todman, they're responsible for all the pretty much classic game shows of the 70s.
Exactly. What's My Line, To Tell the Truth,
right.
I've Got a Secret, all Goodson Todman shows. So one day she said, Dick, I'm leaving, I'm going over to Channel 5, and I'm doing a show called Saturday Morning Live, and we're going to have a carpenter and a pet person and a garden person. She said, you know, your office is always full of weird gadgets.
Yeah.
Would you come on one Saturday and just bring like five gadgets and tell people what they do? And I did that. And she called and she said, you know, we got a lot of mail about that. Do you have more? And I said, oh, yeah. So I started going back and she said, you know, you just want to be a weekly guest. And I said, why not? And then I got a call from Live with Regis, back then, Regis and Kathy Lee.
Right.
And they said, are you exclusive to Five? And I said, no. And so I went to Regis and then on to Good Morning America and now World News Now.
Yeah.
So, yes, I've loved gadgets forever.
Yeah, it's so much fun. Now, listen, were you able to, we were just talking about the CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, for people who might not know what that means. And it's a big, crazy show. In Las Vegas, and you just said like a ton of people go. Were you able to even scratch the surface? How much of it were you able to see?
No, you know, people said, "Did you get to my booth?" And I said, "I didn't even get to that convention center." It's like five convention centers. I walked in 3 days. I walked 13.5 miles.
Man, oh man.
It is, and they are the convention centers like, oh, 3/4 mile long. They are doubling the size by next year. And that's the convention center.
Wow.
The Las Vegas Convention Center. Then they use 4 or 5 different hotels.
Yeah.
It is. You could not see it all.
No,
you could,
there's you could not. No possible way. No possible way. And so many people from around the world.
What?
Yeah.
I was going to say, one reporter sent me an email. They said, Dick, I figured it out. CES is open for 33 hours. There are 7,500 exhibits. If you wanted to see them all, and they were one next to the other, forget going from hotel to hotel, you would have about 37 seconds to see each product. So that's what, and that would be 24 hours a day doing.
That's
that's
so crazy. Now, but you know, as we've discussed before, you know, a lot of people go there. They want to see the new phones. They want to see this. They want to see that. The new, but you like to look for the unusual stuff, like the goofiest stuff. Now, here's I want to continue our conversation, and we're going to talk about some of the weirder things that you saw at CES. And I've got some articles here that are from the Gizwiz. .biz website about some of the other gadgets that you have, and we're going to talk about that. Dick DiBartolo is with us, and we will continue our conversation. We're continuing it right now, and we're going to continue the show right here, and we will talk with more with Dick DiBartolo. It's the Nick DiGilio Show, continuing right here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio, and we've got Two for Tuesday coming up, and that's because every weekday morning and every late night, you program the music that we're going to listen coming back from news breaks and commercial breaks. And the theme for our Tuesday mornings is Two for Tuesday. That means you pick one artist and two songs, and we will play them as you request them. 312-981-7200. That's part of what we do every morning on the show. Right now, we continue our conversation with Dick DiBartolo, the host of the Gizwiz at gizwiz.tv. And he is a gadget freak and also a writer for Mad Magazine, wrote for Match Game, the classic Match Game. All around great guy. And Dick, we're continuing.
Very good.
Yeah.
Now you got another sponsor to go another half hour or 10 minutes.
We'll see. We'll see. So so we were just talking about the CES, the big Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas,
yes,
which is massive and huge and takes up, you know, like five giant convention centers. And you did write about, well, let's talk a little bit about the website first, the gizwiz.tv.
Sure. Yeah, Gizwiz.tv has the products that I do. I have a co-host, Chad Johnson, also known as OMG Chad. This year we went and we shot 15 videos at CES of new gadgets. And then I, on my own, went around. The basement of the Sands is kind of where they have the little booths where there are the more offbeat products. Like, this is my favorite thing there, is the Smart Potato, okay?
The Smart Potato.
So, potato. Now, this guy would not break a smile and would not, I said, is this like a complete satire? He would not answer me. I asked for a product sample for ABC News. He said they couldn't give me one. Yeah. So he stands there. He has a potato in his hand. And he said, this is the Smart Potato Adapter. It's $35. You can buy it. It's on Indiegogo. And you plug this into your potato. And then he said, this device takes the brain waves of the potato, turns it into Bluetooth. And then instead of saying, hey, Google, Alexa, you can say, hey, potato, should I buy the new iPhone? And then he holds up his phone and the potato has a caption. No, don't buy it. Or yes. I mean, so someone said, you know, he said, the guy, another reporter said, it's a complete satire. The thing is, it's a minimum $4,000, I believe, for the smallest booth. This guy's from France. This is an investment. So I don't know what the ultimate goal is, but he's dead serious. It's
Wow.
And then there are
The
things they just make to get publicity, like over at the Charmin booth. And they keep saying, okay, Dick, it's not out now. It might be out in 5 years. The Charmin toilet paper robot.
Now, we talked about all this right? one. I talked about this one when I first...
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
Because it's hilarious. It's a robot that brings you a roll of toilet paper when you're in the bathroom and you realize there's no toilet paper.
Exactly. and also, they had two guys there who developed the robot, and they're now working on this picture of the Charmin bear. It goes on your bathroom door, and it can analyze the smell in the bathroom. So if someone has just used the bathroom, if the bear is like has red eyes, you don't go in. if it's green, the air is clear. And the guy said, he said, we know the chemical formula for bad smells.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's a great way for them to get publicity.
Oh,
I doubt if either one of these will ever see the light of the day.
That is hilarious. That's hilarious.
It's funny, isn't it?
Yeah. Dick DiBartolo is the host of the Gizwiz at gizwiz.tv. He's a gadget and gizmo junkie. He's joining us. It's the Nick DiGilio Show. I'm your host. Tom Hush is the producer, and Dick DiBartolo is the guest. Let's talk a little bit about PIX, P-I-X. This is a backpack that you saw? This is a backpack that you saw at CES, yeah.
At CES. PIX is really great, very expensive, and I'll tell you what to look for. So PIX is a way to, you download the app, you can draw pictures on your phone or whatever you want. Like I said, you know, can you put my logo on a backpack? And she said, absolutely. So you draw whatever you want on your phone and via Bluetooth, I'm not sure if it's Bluetooth or a closed Wi-Fi, you send the images to the back of your backpack, which is a screen, and you can do animations. You can walk down the street with an ad on your back, phone numbers, email me at so-and-so. And it's in their video, they're running a hose over it. The guy's jumping up and down on it. And it's a very nicely built backpack.
Yeah.
Now it's $259. However, she showed me another backpack, just maybe a couple of inches smaller, that's going to be out in the summer for kids for back to school, has the same electronics, and that's going to be $159.
No. Yeah.
And it's really neat, especially, I mean, if you're somebody who needs attention desperately, this would be the way to go. It's called PIX, P-I-X.
And I'm looking at a picture on your website at gizwiz.tv, and there's your logo on the back of the backpack right there.
Yeah, it's neat, isn't it?
Yeah, very cool. So, and did you what else did you see that that you liked? So you said the smaller one is not going to be available for a while, right? So you said the summer.
Until the summer. I think she said April, May, something like that.
Something like that. Okay.
Yeah. So I'll tell you my favorite thing, and I've done this on several shows only because I think it's a great idea. It's called the Heart Hero Portable Defibrillator. Okay.
All right.
A group of doctors who worked in third world countries, and they thought, boy, if we could always have a defibrillator with us, this would be really wonderful. And they got together and they built one. And it's about the size of a paperback book. And they sent me a statistic that every year between 180,000 and 450,000 people in the U.S. die from sudden cardiac arrest.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a portable defibrillator that they hope to get cheap enough that people can have it in their homes for a family. And it's totally automated. If there's an emergency, you press the button. It starts talking you through it. You take the pads out the front. There are pictures on the pads where to put them. And one of the doctors said, if the person will not benefit from a jolt of electricity, it won't send a jolt of electricity through the person.
Mm.
It is really neat. Now, I looked online, and right now the cheapest defibrillator is about $1,500. They're waiting for FDA approval, which they said will be many months, but they hope to have it at about $750.
That sounds like a great. Yeah, I mean, sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, you could have it in your car. You could just take it wherever you go, and on their website. It's hearthero.com, I believe. There's a doctor who says, you don't have to be me to use this. We made it as easy to use so that no one is afraid of it. I thought that was a great idea. I mean, this is really a life-saving gadget. So
yeah.
That was top of my list for useful things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've got a defibrillator in the hallway here in the at the station. I think we have
more. Yeah, but that's coined operated. I was out there. I wasn't crazy about that. It said coin or credit card. I thought, geez.
Dick DiBartolo is with us. He is the host of the GizWiz at thegizwiz.tv. He's a gadget gizmo junkie. Used to write for Match Game, writes for Mad Magazine, been on the show many times. It's the Nick DiGilio Show continuing. Tom Hush is producing, and I am your host. Dick DiBartolo is our guest. Tell me a little bit about the Segway Ninebot products.
Segway, first of all, the one thing that was getting a lot of attention, I'm not sure it's ever going to happen. It's called the Segway S-Pod, and it's like a big, comfy chair that you sit in, but it's got a Segway mechanism in it. So you lean forward and your chair goes forward. You lean back and the chair goes back. And they're saying it might be 5 years down the road, but they thought it would be more for enclosed environments, like maybe amusement parks would buy 100 of them for guests to go around the park.
Mm-hmm.
That was the weirdest. But then, Segway and Ninebot.
By the way, I'm sorry, Dick. I'm sorry. I'm looking at a picture of it. It looks ridiculous. This thing. Looking at it on your website. It looks ridiculous.
Yes. Yes, I know. I mean, would you definitely go down the street in a thing like that?
No. Not at all. Especially not the color purple with the purple helmet that this guy's wearing.
Well, they're very safety conscious over there because they would not let us shoot a video. They wouldn't even let me take a still picture unless I had a crash helmet on.
Oh.
So that's okay. I'm sure the PR people said it must be that way. I'm fine with that.
Yeah
but it just seems a bizarre concept. But then in the Ninebot division, they're adding a bunch of brand new portable scooters. I guess cashing in on the fact that, you know, does Chicago have one of those scooter plans? I think New York is going to have one, and then
the scooter thing was introduced like last year, and you could just leave the scooter. It's just a test, but you could leave the scooters anywhere, and it was just so weird. I would come out of my apartment building, and there'd be a scooter just sitting there. Because you could just...
Did you ever use one?
No, I never used them, but you could just leave them anywhere. It just seemed like a bizarre concept to me. So, well, it's a, Dick, yeah. Hold on one second.
Sure.
Okay, Dick DiBartolo, we're going to continue the conversation. We're continuing the conversation with Dick DiBartolo, the GizWiz from GizWiz.tv. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The Nick DiGiulio Show continues right here on WGN. It's the Nick DiGiulio Show continuing right now, and I'm your host, Nick DiGiulio. Tom Hush is the producer. Coming up, we're going to go to Australia and talk about all of the extreme weather that's happening there. They've gone through all these devastating wildfires, and now they've got systems of hail and extreme storms and dust and flash floods, even causing more damage. So we're going to check in with Barclay Crawford from the Daily Mail Australia, just to see how people are coping and what people are doing to deal with it. Paul Farivar is going to be with us. He is a comedian and a lawyer. His show is called Everyone's a Lawyer. It's at the Laugh Factory in Chicago. A very unique setup. We'll talk about that and play a little, everybody. Everyone's a Lawyer. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And we continue our conversation with Dick DiBartolo, who is the host of the GizWiz. He's the he's at GizWiz.tv, and we love to talk about gadgets and all kinds of really cool gizmos with him. Dick, we were talking about the Segway, the new Segway.
Exactly. So Segway has a 5 or 6 new scooters, anywhere from pedal scooters to pedal assist scooters, and one of them I didn't quite understand, I think Chad was actually talking to those people, is a scooter that captures regenerative power, so as you go forward, some of the power that you're using can be stored in a battery. That might be new for push scooters, but I'm not sure about that. And also, Nick, I just wanted to point out that GizWiz.tv is where the podcast is, and descriptions and pictures of all the gadgets are at GizWiz.biz.
Oh, okay, GizWiz.biz and GizWiz.tv.
.biz, I think, is where you are. You're at GizWiz.biz, seeing photos.
Right.
Also, in the smart line, now I have no way to know if this works or not. There's something, and maybe older people or caregivers would be interested in this. It's called the smart belt.
Okay.
Which, this is what they explained to me, is that it analyzes your walking pattern. And if it senses that you're now slightly walking not the way you're supposed to, it will set off an alarm that you might be in danger of falling.
Mm.
And now I'm not sure if it, I guess it wouldn't matter to send a signal to a caregiver, because unless they were standing next to you. But I think the thing is that to make you aware of it, that maybe sit down, hold on to a wall.
Right.
But if you go on Google and type in smart belt, you can see info about that. Everything in the world was smart. I think that's why smart potato was so funny, because I saw Smarty Pans. Okay, I think the name is cute.
Uh-huh.
Smarty Pans is a frying pan with a built-in brain that helps you cook. The smart shoe. The smart shoe, you wear it, it sends to your phone your heart rate, your blood pressure, your stress level, your emotions. I mean, you need your phone to tell you how you feel. I mean, you know, you look at your phone and the phone says, oh, I'm happy. I thought I was fuming, but yeah. My phone says I'm happy. I guess
I'm okay. Yeah.
Yes. The smart bath mat.
Okay.
As you stand on it, it gives you your weight and your blood pressure. I I don't know. I mean, it's like, just to me, it's just too crazy.
Yeah, it's like, wait, do we really need to know our blood pressure every 2 seconds? Is that something we need to know?
No, you're exactly right. Exactly right. Something else I thought was interesting, and I'm not sure if it worked for all furniture. It's called K-E-W, furniture charging. And this is a way to build charging into, say, your dining room table so that the electronics would be under the table, but you could lay your phone on the top of the table. You would know under the table where the charging port is, so that it wirelessly through the wood could charge your phone.
Wow.
So I didn't get to talk to those people, but that sounded like a fascinating idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Dick DiBartolo is with us, and he is the Gizwiz, and he likes to talk about gadgets and gizmos, and we love to have him on. It's the Nick DiGilio Show continuing here on a late Monday night into a Tuesday morning. Tom Hush is the producer, and Dick DiBartolo is the host. I was looking at some of the other things here, Dick. And I know that you love gadgets and things like that. And on ABC's World News Now, where you profile a lot of this, I'm looking now at the Nostalgia Retro Series pop-up hot dog toaster.
That goes back a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, because you were doing some of the old retro stuff. And I think we've talked about this years ago on the show, but I'm looking at a picture of it, of the Nostalgia Retro Series pop-up hot dog toaster, and I think it looks hilarious. It looks pretty hilarious.
You know what? It's very funny. I personally thought it was atrocious because it first of all, the hot dogs kept getting stuck down. Second of all, they give you metal tongs to take things out of the toaster. They're not insulated. I'm thinking, are they kidding? I hope people realize you have to unplug the toaster.
Yeah.
Before you ever put metal tongs in a toaster. We could not get it to do anything in one cycle. To explain it, you drop two hot dogs into two round holes, and you fold open two buns, and you put them into two semicircle holes.
Right.
And in theory, they come up together and they're cooked. Well, we never achieved that. Like I said, I think kids would think this is great. I don't think they would care that the hot dog was half done and the buns were burned or vice versa.
Yeah.
But the retro line is very funny. They occasionally go back and just reproduce something that we knew well when we were kids, although I never knew about the hot dog and bun toaster.
No, I didn't know about that either. You telling me that they provide metal tongs is astonishing. That's absolutely crazy.
It's crazy. I mean, I think you're better off just leaving them out of the box.
Yeah.
And put in a pair of wooden chopsticks. You're better off.
Yeah. another one. This isn't retro. This is another new one for CES here. It's a new product that merges the smart home with the smart boat.
Oh yes. So that is from a company called Barnacle, and Barnacle. It's an interesting idea. I think the Barnacle Mate is more for big boats because they recognize that people with bigger boats are now installing cameras everywhere, and installing sensors on the doors and on the portholes. And so they thought they should come up with a device that lets you integrate your smart home gadgets with the sensors that you need for a boat. For example, you could set this up. I mean, it starts at $300 and probably goes into the thousands. But you can set up sensors so that on your phone, if you have a yacht, you could look at it. You could see what each battery is doing.
Mm.
You can see if the bilge pumps are running. You can see how many times the bilge pump went on. So that would be a great indication that something's wrong on your boat if you looked at it and you saw the bilge pump went on 100 times in the past 3 hours. Something bad's going on your boat.
Yeah.
It's the first alarm system I know of from a company that was blending smart home with smart boat.
Oh, okay. I've never thought about that before, but I guess it makes sense, you know, if you're...
Yeah, you know, I have a drop cam. I have a little 25-foot work boat. It kind of looks like a little tugboat. I have a drop cam in the back window, and it's perfect. And I have a little engine heater because last year my engine froze and something on it split and broke, and it's a brand new $25,000 engine.
Oh.
So this Bob Kyler, this genius guy, installed a heater pad inside the engine that goes on at 32 degrees and then shuts off when the temperature goes above freezing. And I can look through my camera, and we installed some lights in the back of my boat. And so when the heater comes on, it also turns the lights on. So like 10 minutes ago, I was looking. I looked at the thermometer on my computer. It said it's 27 outside. I went onto my drop cam. I can see the lights are on the back of my boat, which means the heat is on. So my engine's nice and toasty.
Yeah.
I mean, technology is really amazing. The things we can do today are astounding.
It really is.
Yeah, well, you know, Leo Laporte, who has this channel called Twit, This Week in Tech, he also was shooting stuff with his iPhone. I shoot my stuff with an LG G7.
Mm-hmm.
Chad shoots his video with an iPhone. So if you have an iPhone, the only thing you need with a phone is an external mic, because phones don't have great mics. But you can be a producer with very little money these days.
By the way, I have the same phone that you do. I have the LG G7.
Oh, great! I like it a lot.
Me too. Me too. I think it's a great phone, and I think it works wonderfully. So when is your next appearance? When can people see you on ABC?
Let's see. I was on ABC this morning.
Okay.
I'll be doing Toy Fair. So mid-February, that's one of my favorite things. They just send a camera guy, and we make no appointments. We just walk around Toy Fair.
Yeah.
And anything nutty we see, we just film.
Well,
and then at the studio, they put it together.
I want to get you back on for Toy Fair. Can we get you back on for Toy Fair?
Okay. Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah. And so that's what you're working on next is Toy Fair?
It's Toy Fair.
Okay.
For World News Now. And if you follow me on Twitter, at the Gizwiz, I always post what I'm doing and where I can be seen and yada, yada, yada.
And it's that is G-I-Z-W-I-Z.
That is correct. At the Gizwiz.
At the Gizwiz. Okay.
Yeah.
Dick, you're one of my favorite guests, I swear.
I always tell people, tune in, because even though I drone on, this guy is really great. But I was talking about a different host. I'm sorry. It's the show I'm doing tomorrow night.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. All right. Dick DiBartolo, the host of the Gizwiz at gizwiz.tv, writer for Mad Magazine, used to write for Match Game, one of my favorite guests. Always a pleasure to have you on, Dick,
okay,
and we thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. You're okay. Super, and so is Tom.
Okay, take care.
There you go. Care.
Dick DiBartolo. I love that guy. Love him. Like, seriously, a hero. So, all right. We got the news coming up next here on the Nick DiGiulio Show. Nick DiGiulio here on the Nick DiGiulio Show, continuing on this Tuesday morning. Two for Tuesday. Is that a two for Tuesday?
Yes, it is.
All right. It's two for Tuesday. And here's what happens. Every morning, you pick the songs that we play when we're coming back from news and breaks. And we have a theme each morning. Two for Tuesday is you pick one artist and two songs. You make those requests, and we play those two songs from that one artist as part of the breaks when we return from breaks. So two for Tuesday. That's what it is. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Warren in Pennsylvania.
So does Focus have another song?
They do. Well, in fact, that's an alternate version.
It is an alternate version.
Yeah, Hocus Pocus 2.
That's Hocus Pocus. Oh, so we're going to hear Hocus Pocus 1?
No, we will get something else.
Okay,
we're gonna get a different song. I can promise you that.
Okay.
I didn't realize there was a sequel to Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, but, no, they did an alternate version of it. But the other version, the original Hocus Pocus version, is used in the best scene in Baby Driver.
Yep,
the most outstanding scene in Baby Driver. So it's Nick DiGiulio. We are live in the Skyline Studio, continuing this morning on a Tuesday morning. Tom Hush is the producer, and I am your host. Coming up, we are going to check in Australia. Barclay Crawford is going to join us. He's an editor at Daily Mail Australia. And some horrible storms are ripping through Australia right now. There's hail, dust, flash floods, more damage. And this is coming on the heels of these unbelievably devastating wildfires, which are also still going on. So we're going to check in with Daily Mail Australia with Barclay Crawford and find out what's going on. What is the future? How are people dealing with it? It's just really madness happening in Australia right now. So we want to get a report from there. And then Paul Favavar is going to join us. He is a stand-up comedian and a lawyer, and he has a show called Everyone's a Lawyer at the Laugh Factory here in Chicago, Sunday, January 26th at 7 p.m., and he'll tell you all about it. But it basically is people, it's a comedy show where you actually argue real-life legal issues back and forth. And we're going to do a little bit of Everyone's a Lawyer here in studio because we want to hear what Paul does with his act, and that's coming up. 312-981-7200. Is the phone number. We're also going to talk about some of the best radio jocks of all time. Yesterday was DJ, National DJ Day, and we got some real demands made by celebrities behind the scenes. 2 for Tuesday continues, 312-981-7200. So we have some of the biggest scams in modern history that we're going to talk about, but one of the biggest ones is so big that this guy's last name became synonymous This guy's last name became synonymous with scams, with ripoffs, with schemes. Ponzi. Charles Ponzi is the man's name. And when you hear Ponzi scheme, you think scam. You think getting ripped off. And it's amazing. That's the guy's real name. His last name is Ponzi, and he's associated with that. Some of the most infamous scams in history have been Ponzi schemes, but before Bernie Madoff or Bitcoin, there was Charles Ponzi himself. The con he built was so successful that his last name has become synonymous with fraud. In January 2020, a century after he set up his fraudulent securities exchange company, the phrase Ponzi scheme is still used to describe any scheme in which funds from new investors are used to pay back old investors. Here are some facts about Ponzi and his scheme that you might want to learn about. And then we're going to talk about some of the biggest scams in modern history. Which ones do you remember? 312-981-7200. For talk or text, you can text us right now. You can call us right now with what are some of the biggest scams of all time that you remember? 312-981-7200. There are a lot of them. There's never not someone who wants to scam another person. If there's a, you know, there's a devious person out there, scams and Ponzi schemes are going to continue to exist. So, 312-981-7200 for talk and text for scams. Charles Ponzi was born in Lugo, Italy in 1882. As a young adult, he worked as a postal worker and he studied at the University of Roma. Neither path panned out for him, however. And in 1903, when he was faced with dwindling funds, Ponzi boarded a ship for America. I'm going to sneeze. Ooh, okay. He boarded a ship for America in search of a better life, but Ponzi wasn't a master hustler at that point in his life. He arrived in Boston with $2.50 in his pocket after gambling away the rest of his life savings on the ship.
Off to a great start.
Ponzi was no stranger to crime before concocting the scheme that made his surname infamous. Not long after arriving in Boston, he moved to Canada and got in trouble for forging checks. He spent 2 years in a Canadian prison for his offenses. Back in the U.S., he served a term in federal prison for illegally transporting 5 Italian immigrants across the Canadian border. It was only after his so-called Ponzi scheme began to crumble that his criminal history was made public by journalists, thus speeding up his downfall. By 1920, Ponzi discovered the key to the ultimate get-rich-quick scheme, an international postal reply coupon worth 5 cents. It had been included in a parcel he received from Spain as prepayment for his reply postage. Thanks to an international treaty, the voucher could be exchanged for one U.S. postage stamp worth a nickel, which Ponzi could then sell. Ponzi knew that the value of the Spanish posada had recently fallen, and in retaliation to the dollar, which meant that the coupon was actually worth more than it used to be in Spain. He took this concept to the extreme by recruiting people back home in Italy to buy postal reply coupons in bulk from countries with weak economies so that he could redeem them in the U.S. for a profit. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Ponzi technically wasn't breaking any laws with his postal service transactions, and if he had kept his idea to himself, he would have gotten away with it. Instead, he turned his small money-making operation into a wide-reaching scam. If people invested money into his quote-unquote business of cashing in foreign postal vouchers, which he dubbed the Securities Exchange Company, that that's really funny. I mean, I know that's what he called the company, but they would get their money back plus 50% interest in 90 days. The deal was too good for many investors to pass up, but it was also too good to be true. The money wasn't being used to buy coupons overseas. Ponzi kept most of his investments for himself and used the flood of money coming in from new investors to pay off the old ones. Many investors were so thrilled with their returns that they invested whatever money they made back into the business, which helped Ponzi keep the sham afloat. Ponzi was finally rich and famous, but soon enough, cracks in the scheme started to form. The Boston Post launched an investigation into Ponzi and revealed that in order for his business to be functional, he would need to be moving 160 million vouchers across world borders. There were only 27,000 postal reply coupons in circulation at the time. The final blow came when the publicist he had hired to represent him came out against him in the public. His system fell apart. It was revealed that he had stolen $20 million from investors. Because he had lied to his clients about their investments through the mail, Ponzi was ultimately charged by the federal government for mail fraud. He served 3.5 years in prison and then served an additional 9 years for state charges. And then, though Ponzi schemes were eventually named for him, Charles Ponzi didn't invent this type of scam. There were many crooks before him who used the same method to exploit investors. Charles Dickens even wrote a pre-Ponzi scheme into his 1857 novel, Little Dorrit. It's possible that Ponzi got the idea for his own fraud from William F. Miller, who pulled a similar stunt working as a bookkeeper in Brooklyn in 1899. It was the highs of the Ponzi success and the lows of his demise that made his story so memorable. Little Dorrit, wow.
All right.
I remember when the movie Little Dorrit came out, when they did a movie version of it in the 80s.
Oh, geez.
They did a movie version of it in the 80s. a couple of my friends went to go see it, and they dubbed it Little Snorrit. Not a very exciting film.
I can't imagine.
Yeah, little Snorrit.
Little Snorrit. Yeah. Oh, that's too bad for Little Dorrit.
All right. We want to hear from you. It is the Nick DiGilio Show, and we are live here in the Skyline Studio. It continues. Tom Hush is the producer. Nick DiGilio, that's me. I am the host, and we are here till 4. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The show continues, and we're going to talk about the biggest scams in modern history. Which ones do you remember? What are the most memorable ones, the craziest scams in modern history? 312-981-7200. The Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on 720 WGN, here till 4 a.m. live in the Skyline Studio. It's the Nick DiGilio Show. I'm your host, Nick DiGilio. Tom Hush is the producer. And as we continue this morning, this Tuesday morning, two for Tuesday, that means that you request the songs that we hear. The theme for Tuesday, every Tuesday, is two for Tuesday. That's where you pick one artist and two songs by that artist, and we play them back. Okay. I do recognize that song. From Focus.
Eruption.
Yeah, I do. All right. So we're talking about scams. We were just telling you the history of Charles Ponzi, who scammed people out of over $20 million and then went to jail for it. And, you know, scam, the word scam and fraud is associated now with the word Ponzi scheme. But there are more. There are a lot more scams, and I've got a bunch of them here, and we want to hear from you. In modern history, what are the ones that you remember, the big scams that you remember? I've got a bunch here, and they're in chronological order. But the first one that I remember is Abscam, the David O. Russell, American Hustle, which was, I remember when I was reading about American Hustle being made. American Hustle is this movie that David O. Russell made with Christian Bale and Amy Adams, mm-hmm. Jennifer Lawrence, and Bradley Cooper, and it was about the Abscam scandal. from the '70s. And I remember when I was reading about it, I'm like, is he really making a movie out of this? Is he really, this is going to be the subject of a David O. Russell movie? And it turned out to be great. And I love that movie.
You know, I haven't watched it in so long. I don't even remember what the con was. I know there was like someone pretended to be a sheik.
Yeah, I've got it right here. It's listed in this article. An American hustler creates AbScam. In the late 1970s, the FBI launched AbScam, an elaborate and controversial government corruption investigation that brought down a half dozen members of Congress. The man the agency enlisted to run the program, which included fake Arab sheiks offering bribes to lawmakers, was Melvin Weinberg, who was facing prison time for a long string of masterful scams that he had been running with his girlfriend. 2013 blockbuster American Hustle, which was based on the scam within a scam, earned 10 Academy Award nominations, including Best Actor for Christian Bale, who played Weinberg. So yeah, it was an FBI scam.
Oh, it was a sting.
Yeah, it was a sting operation.
Okay,
and
they had to hire the one man they knew.
Well, yeah,
could pull it off.
Yeah, well, they also made a deal with him because he was facing prison time because he was just, I mean. If you just look at some of the stuff, because some of the stuff in that movie is so hilarious. All the stupid stuff that this guy did, you know, all the scams that he had beforehand. There's like a montage of them in the movie. But I remember AbScam. I remember I was young. It was you know, the late '70s. So I was like 13, 14 when it happened. But I remember it. I didn't quite understand it.
Yeah, what was news coverage even like of an FBI sting?
It was
operation?
A big, well, when it broke, you know what I mean? When it finally broke and the senators were sent away, it became a massive story, you know? Mm-hmm. But I just remember, you know, when I was, like I said, back in 2012 or something, when I was reading about David O. Russell's new movie, it's about AbScam. I'm like, what?
Who would make a movie about AbScam?
What? And it's wildly entertaining movie. Yeah. I mean, just. Is just so funny and so good. And everybody in it is spectacular. Everybody in it is spectacular. What does Jennifer Lawrence call the microwave?
Oh, a science oven.
A science oven.
Max, the science oven's on fire again. She keeps putting like aluminum foil metal
in there, yeah. God, she's hilarious in that movie. Hilarious. So is Christian Bale. Everybody's great in that movie. It's just great all the way around. All right, how about this? This is a real thing. Now, you've heard this, right? There's a phrase that's been around forever that if you believe that, I got a bridge to sell to you. All right, well, that's real. That's based in reality.
The man who sold the... It was the Brooklyn Bridge,
The
right?
Brooklyn Bridge, that's
oh,
right.
Good Lord.
That's right.
I don't know.
It's a real. It was a real scam. And then this phrase now, if you believe that, I got a bridge to sell you. The street smart have long taunted the naive and gullible with the phrase, if you believe that, I got a bridge to sell you. The statement, it is an homage to a long line of con artists who began, quote-unquote, selling the Brooklyn Bridge almost as soon as it was completed in 1883 to suckers who thought they had scored the deal of a lifetime. In 1899, con artist and future mayor Peaches O'Day... Wait a minute, what?
Well, that's a name.
Future mayor Peaches O'Day... Would you vote for a guy named Peaches O'Day for mayor?
Well, if I believed that I was going to get free fruit every 24 hours, yeah.
He sold the bridge for $200. William McCloundy served 2.5 years in Sing Sing for selling the bridge in 1901, and George C. Parker sold it several times over the course of his life. So that's a real thing. People sold the Brooklyn Bridge several times. So the bridge was completed in 1883, and people started to, you know, these scam artists started to sell the Brooklyn Bridge like almost immediately. So that's that phrase that we've used for many, many, many years is actually based in a real scam. Guys selling the Brooklyn Bridge. All right, how about this one? Lou Blonger scams the West. At the same point Charles Ponzi was running his scam in New York, the reign of a towering figure from the Old West was coming to an end. Lou Blonger and his brothers worked and conned their way across the Western frontier and eventually organized all of the major con men, grifters, and scam artists in lawless and violent Denver into a single underworld operation that continued for decades. the Civil War veteran who hobnobbed the Wild West with Wild West giants like Doc Holliday, Bat Masterson, and the Earp Brothers, was convicted in 1924 and he died in prison. I did not know that. Now, see, that's a movie. That's a movie right there. I wonder if they've ever made a movie out of that. Maybe there's an old movie that, you know, that was like a low budget thing that somebody made. Because that, I would see that movie without question. So, we're talking scams. Some of the most memorable ones in modern history. 312-981-7200. And we will continue. Some phone lines are open. Some texts are coming in. 312-981-7200. Some of the most memorable scams of all time. The Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on 720 WGN.
Crazy. I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy.
Ah, yes. Crazy. Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on 720 WGN live in the Skyline Studio. I'm your host, Nick DiGilio. Tom Hush is your producer. We're here till 4. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, two for Tuesday. It's one artist, two songs. You pick them, we play them. Who picked the Patsy Cline?
That's coming to us from Michael in Iowa.
Michael in Iowa. All right. And Nick DiGilio, continuing here. Coming up, we're going to check in with Australia. They're having horrible weather over there, devastating wildfires, and now this really insane storm system, hail, dust, flash floods. We're going to check in with Barclay Crawford, editor over at Daily Mail Australia, just to see how it's going over there and how the people of Australia are dealing with it and what lies in the future. Paul Farivar is going to join us. He's a comedian and a lawyer. Everyone's a Lawyer is a show at the Laugh Factory in Chicago. We'll talk about that and more, and talk about some of the funny stuff, and then play a little round of that show. So see what Paul does in his show. And the phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. We've been talking now about scams, some of the most famous scams in modern history. There have been a ton of them. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Here's Rich on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Hi, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
This scam is still unfolding, and I think it's probably going to be on the radar for one of the most historic ones. The Elizabeth Holmes thing with Theranos.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that a movie apparently is being made, and Jennifer Lawrence, I think, is going to be playing her. Go figure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think you could have written that if you tried, she was trying to pull off.
Yeah, it's amazing what people can get away with.
When I watch, I mean, there's all kinds of talks she gave on YouTube, and now that the cat's out of the bag and the like, and everybody knows she was a scammer, when you see her talk now, you can kind of discern the babble she was like spinning.
Yeah,
and she wasn't answering anything, but right. She pulled the wool over like tons of eyes.
Yeah, that's true. That's
all
true.
Over. Yeah. Well, right. That's an interesting one.
Got it, Rich. Thank you.
Well, yep. Bye bye.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Here's Paula on WGN. Hi, Paula.
Oh, hi. I've got a bridge for you if you're interested. By the way. Anyhow, Clifford Irving wrote a supposed intimate story about Howard Hughes, who he'd never met, I guess, but he claimed to have interviewed and been with him. But he was actually with a beautiful woman called Nina Van Pallant or something, who I really loved in this movie Robert Altman made called The Long Goodbye.
Right.
And I wish he had had a longer career, because she got famous out of his little scam. And I don't know if the book was ever published or not, though. I was younger then. I don't remember all the details. Yeah. I just remember her being there and then turning up in the movie.
Yeah, and it affected her career as well because of this scam that this guy wrote a fake book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, Paula, thank you.
Good night. Right.
How about the Baker Estate, the Baker Estate con. This is December 1936. 28 people were indicted. 28 people were indicted in what was then the biggest mail fraud scheme in history. The fraud revolved around the famously wealthy Jacob Baker of Philadelphia, who had died while his estate remained unprobated, and therefore remained open to claims by anyone named Baker or to the swindlers wanted Baker's. So the swindlers wanted Bakers across America to believe. Purporting to represent the state, the swindlers collected $3 million from 3,000 people who paid to stake their claims. In reality, there was no Jacob Baker and no such estate ever existed. Wow. So you're just going to believe, though, that someone calls you up and goes, your last name is Baker, you're...
Oh, man.
You got to pay to... You can stake your claim. 3,000 people they scammed, and 28 people were indicted.
It's remarkable. Well, and I feel like that sort of thing still goes on today where, especially with the rise in like robocalls and people just trying to call you on the phone and scam, it's the modern day mail fraud.
Yeah.
My grandma actually told me on Sunday that that happened to her. Someone just called her out of the blue and said, hey, this is your grandson. I'm stuck in New Jersey. And she was just like, why are you in New Jersey? She didn't believe it, but she's like, why are you in New Jersey? Oh, I was there for a funeral and I got stuck here. And then the guy started literally rattling off family members' names.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah, it was freaky. When she told me about it, I was just like, well, I better go freeze all my credit real quick just in case.
Did the guy sound like you or your brothers?
No. But...
And she must have known, right? I mean,
yeah, but she's 80 something. I think on a certain level, she was like, wait, maybe I'm just hearing this wrong. Got ages right.
Wow.
Got names right.
You know, it's always
a scary thing.
When we have Herb Weisbaum on, who is our consumer guy, consumerman.com, you should check out his website, subscribe to his newsletter. He's great. You learn something every time he comes on, and you're scared every time he comes on because of the level that these guys go, these scam artists go. You know, these robocalls, these phone calls. We talk about it every time Herb is on. It doesn't slow down. These guys will do anything and everything to try and rip somebody off.
And it makes you never want to pick up the phone again.
That's true. I don't, though.
Unless, I'm lucky if you pick up my phone calls.
Unless I recognize the name, I don't. Do not answer.
No.
All right, how about the quiz show scandals? Robert Redford directed a film called Quiz Show. With Ralph Fiennes and John Turturro and the great Christopher McDonald playing Jack Barry. And it was about the quiz show scandal from the $64,000 question. By the end of the 1950s, it took a very long time for people to trust quiz shows again. Like after this happened, people were the ratings for quiz shows went through the floor. Nobody trusted them anymore. It took a long time. And that makes sense, considering what happened. By the end of the 1950s, quiz shows were so dominant that the $64,000 question... No, I'm sorry, 21 was the game show that got busted. Became the first show to topple I Love Lucy from the number one spot. As many as 24 quiz shows were on at one time, and the competition was so fierce that many started cutting corners until a long-reigning 21 champion contestant claimed the show was rigged. His accusation and many others that would soon follow were never proven, but they sparked criminal and congressional investigations and were so much public outcry that every single quiz show soon went off the air until 1963, and that is when Merv Griffin came up with Jeopardy. Merv Griffin's wife came up with Jeopardy, by the way. Merv Griffin's name is on it, but Merv Griffin's wife came up with Jeopardy.
Did she really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
A show that would reassure skeptical audiences by giving the contestants the answers first and then making them respond in question form. That was his wife's idea.
That was genius, really.
Wife's idea. Yeah. And the show is still running strong.
You must answer in the form of a question.
How about this one? Anybody in this business knows about this one.
Oh, geez.
Paola. Yep, the Paola radio scandal. Almost immediately after he wrapped up the quiz show hearings, a powerful congressman named Orrin Harris launched an investigation into Paola, the name given to a common practice in the record industry that had recently been publicly decried by President Dwight Eisenhower himself. In Paola scams, the record industry manufactured hit songs by paying DJs large sums of money to give their records extra airtime. Since the airwaves were public, the 1960 Paola hearings investigated the practice as a breach of the public trust.
Well, we'll get into that later, I'm sure, with the jocks.
Because yesterday was National DJ Day. And so we're going to talk about some DJs and some of the best radio jocks.
But Alan Freed.
Yeah.
The guy who invented the term rock and roll.
Yep.
Taken down.
773 area code. We're talking about scams. 773 area code says that Bernie Madoff. Well, yeah, we'll get to that one.
I think that's the first time I ever heard the term Ponzi scheme.
Was when the Madoff thing broke?
Yeah, when, I mean, what year was that? I feel like that was in the 2000 to 2010.
Early, somewhere. You know, like mid-2000s?
Yeah, somewhere in there. I remember, I had just never seen anything like it. I had never seen anything like Bernie Madoff before.
Let's see, wait a minute. Let me see. Bernie Madoff. So we've got, well, we'll get to Enron too. That's coming up. WorldCom, HealthSouth, Fannie Mae. 2008.
2008.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
it was in
2008.
It was in the midst of the financial crisis.
Yeah, it was in the midst of the financial crisis. Yeah.
Wow.
It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's the Nick DiGilio Show. We are live in the Skyline Studio, continuing through 4 a.m. Tom Hush is the producer, and we're talking about some of the biggest scams in modern history. And which ones do you remember? Which ones are the ones that stand out for you? 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 on the Nick DiGilio Show. 301 sends this text in. And if you want to send a text in, it's 312-981-7200. There's a Sam Fuller movie starring Vincent Price called The Baron of Arizona, based on a real incident where a fellow posed as a person who had been deeded the state of Arizona. Wow, Sam Fuller and Vincent Price. Wow. I've never seen that movie. Tom, do you know The Baron of Arizona?
I do not.
But Sam Fuller and Vincent Price, man.
That's an interesting combo.
That's a great combo. Looking up, what year was this thing?
So this came out in 1950.
Okay.
Samuel Fuller directing, Vincent Price and Ellen Drew.
Okay. 1950, The Baron of Arizona. That's something I need to look up. See if that's available. So, all right. All right, how about this? Catching Frank Abagnale Jr. This is one of two scam artists that Leo DiCaprio has played. Because he played a real-life scam artist in The Wolf of Wall Street, too.
He's got a knack for it, it seems.
Yeah. Leonardo DiCaprio has portrayed more than one scammer in this article. The first is Frank Abagnale Jr. in Catch Me If You Can. That is a really terrific movie, by the way. That's a really, really terrific movie. Didn't he have two movies that year?
What was that,
2002? Didn't Spielberg had 2002?
Minority Report.
Yeah, he had a good year that year.
Very good year.
Minority Report is actually one of my favorite Spielberg movies ever. Seriously.
It's spectacular.
Oh, it's so good. A grifter from his teenage years when he used gas cards to pay for thousands of dollars worth of dates. Abagnale passed millions in bad checks, posed as a doctor, a lawyer, a professor, and even an airline pilot while charming his way through multiple double lives in a series of cons around the world. A massive manhunt ended with his capture in France in 1969, but he conceived an early release from prison. He received an early release from prison. On the condition that he helped law enforcement foil con men and forgers like him. You know, there's an episode of, you see it at the end of the movie. You actually see it at the end of Catch Me If You Can. Mm-hmm. There's a real episode of To Tell the Truth where it's him and two imposters. Because, mm-hmm. You know, To Tell the Truth, game show, obviously, where there are three people come out and they claim to be this person. And one of them is obviously the real person and the other are lying. And the panel of celebrities have to ask questions to these three people, one being the real one, the two being imposters, and then the celebrities vote on who they think mm-hmm. the real person is. Mm-hmm. Obviously, classic game show.
Yeah.
But that episode, they've shown it on the Game Show Network a couple of times, with the real episode with Frank Abagnale. And he did end up working with the FBI.
Yeah, well, I mean, his ability to forge checks, I remember, was a big portion of that,
yeah,
of that adaptation of his life. And I mean, they still do that sort of stuff to this day with hackers. You got to get, if you want to catch a hacker, you have to have a hacker. So if you want a con man,
yeah,
you better get a con man, because yeah, they can think like them and they understand the grift.
And again, to mention our friend Herb Weissbaum again, he has worked with guys like that. He's interviewed guys like that. He interviewed Frank Abagnale. Yeah, exactly. But there are a lot of guys out there who were scamming people for a long time, and then now they're working for the good guys. And Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. But that's a good movie. If people have not seen that movie, it's Steven Spielberg, Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hanks. Catch Me If You Can. A really entertaining film. Okay, more scams. We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Talk or text. What are the most memorable scams that you can think of? And more is coming up as the Nick DiGilio Show continues. The Nick DiGilio Show continues this Tuesday morning. We're here till 4 a.m. Coming up after the 1 o'clock news, we're going to go out to Australia and talk with Barclay Crawford, editor at Daily Mail Australia. They've been hit with some insane weather out there, some hail, dust, flash floods, and this is while these wildfires are going on. So we're going to get in touch with some people out. And we're going to talk with the editor over at Daily Mail Australia. Paul Farivarv is going to join us. He's a stand-up comedian and a lawyer. We're going to talk about his show. And more. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN. We're talking about scams right now. We would love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. What are the more memorable scams that you can remember? And we've been going through some of the more memorable ones of the modern age. Let's see. Russ just sent in a text, and you can send in a text too and call us at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Russ says, Nick, let's not forget the Don LARP scam and his pennies on the dollar and 900 number scams. My mom fell for that crap and lost $600. Yeah, these guys are unforgivable, they just have no conscience whatsoever. They don't care who they rip off. They don't care who they are, what they do, how much money they don't have. You know, if they have, they'll take every penny from people. These are scammers, man. These are big-time scammers. So we were talking about the movie American Hustle with the fake Arab sheiks, which was about the AB scam, which was something the FBI launched. Now, how about this one? What started as a single electronic store in Brooklyn, New York in the 1970s became Crazy Eddie's, one of the biggest retail chains in the region, with some of the most memorable commercials ever produced, all of which was supported by one of the biggest frauds in the modern era. Before the company went public, founder Eddie Antar hid money, filed false paperwork, and paid employees in cash to avoid payroll taxes. After it went public, he pumped some of the money he had been skimming back into the company to make it appear more profitable so that he could sell his stock at an inflated price. As the 80s came to a close, the jig was up, his stores went bankrupt, and Antar was sentenced to 6 years in prison. Everybody remembers those commercials, the Crazy Eddie commercials. I remember when this story broke. I always thought the commercials were hilarious, the Crazy Eddie commercials. But when the story broke, I was just like, what? What happened? And I wonder whatever happened to him. 6 years in prison. Wonder where Eddie Antar is now, A-N-T-A-R. But yeah, Crazy Eddie's. Those commercials were, I'm Crazy Eddie, and my savings are crazy. All right, how about this one? Praise the Lord Ministries. In 1988, televangelist Jim Baker was indicted on federal charges, the final demise of what had been the biggest Christian radio and television empire on earth. Jim Baker and his wife Tammy Faye had been bilking their supporters, viewers, and investors, a fact that came out only in the wake of far more salacious scandal. After Baker paid church secretary-turned-actress Jessica Hahn nearly $300,000 to keep quiet about a sexual affair of disputed consensuality, the public learned about the financial scam, and Baker landed a 45-year sentence, which was later reduced to 8 years. He now hawks doomsday prepper equipment online. You weren't alive during this. This was big. This was a big one. This was a big one. Lots of crying on the part of Jim Baker and Tammy Faye with her fantastic eye makeup.
I have heard about it, though.
And then Jessica Hahn comes out of nowhere. She gets plastic surgery, poses for Playboy, starts dating Sam Kinison.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
No, I did not know about the Sam Kinison part.
Yeah, she dated Sam Kinison. She's in the Wild Thing video with him. And this was right after the scandal broke. Nobody knew who she was. People knew who Jim Baker and Tammy Faye Baker were, but
sure. Nobody
knew how many people they ripped off. Mm-mm. And the crying, the Jim Baker breakdown, please forgive me, like on air bawling, yeah. Tammy Faye crying all the time. And then she ended up on a talk show, years after the scandal, after Jim Baker and she broke up, split up. Do you know who J. Jim Bullock is? J.M. Jim Bullock?
It sounds really familiar.
Jim Bullock.
Jim Bullock.
Do you ever see the show Too Close for Comfort with Ted Knight?
No.
Where he and his wife live upstairs from their two daughters, played by Deborah Van Valkenburgh from The Warriors, and I can't remember the other actress's name.
I have not seen that.
He was the wacky neighbor, J.M. Jim Bullock. He was the wacky neighbor, Monroe. And he was a regular on game shows. You know, he appeared on stuff like Hollywood Squares and Match Game and stuff like that. So that's the kind of level of celebrity that J.M. Jim Bullock had. But everybody knew him from Too Close for Comfort because he played the annoying neighbor, Monroe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he ended up co-hosting a show with Tammy Faye Baker. I'm not making this up. Daytime talk show. It was the Tammy Faye and Jim J. Bullock show. If I remember the name of it. They were the hosts. It was a train wreck. But I watched it a lot because it was one of those shows that you couldn't take your eyes away from the screen because it was just like, who green lit this? So, yeah. They went on to co-star in a daytime talk show.
That's odd. That is truly... Well, you know what the weird part is that I did see him in a show when I was a kid.
Yeah.
He was in a show called Ned's Declassified School Survival Guide when I was probably in about middle school, and his character's name was Mr. Monroe.
Is that basically the only name that he played in character-wise?
It would appear so.
But anyway, no, that's a real thing. The Jim Baker, Tammy Faye Baker scandal lasted a long time, and it had many weird avenues to it. It was really one of the strangest ones. I mean, Jessica Hahn, she gets plastic surgery, she poses for Playboy, you know, becomes this scandalous star, and then starts dating Sam Kinison. I'm like, what is going on? Who, by the way, you know Sam Kinison's background is as a brimstone preacher. Do you know what I mean? So there's even another level of weirdness to it.
Yeah.
That she would end up dating Sam Kinison.
Oh, my God.
And at that point, he was completely, he was blown out of his mind on drugs at that point. Kinison, out of his mind.
My goodness.
So, yeah, weird stuff, man. 80s were weird.
You're telling me.
80s were weird, man.
Apparently, she was in a relationship with Ron Levitt, the co-creator of Married with Children.
Oh, yeah, because she was on Married with Children a lot. Jessica Hahn was on Married with Children a lot. She was like a guest star.
That's odd.
Yeah. All right. Coming up, we got the news. The Nick DiGilio show continues. And then after the news, we're going to go out to Australia and see how they're doing out there. Some really crazy weather and bad wildfires are happening. We're going to talk with the editor of the Daily Mail Australia. That's after the news, which is next. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We continue on this Tuesday morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're live in the Skyline studio here until 4 a.m. I'm your host, Nick DiGilio, and my producer is Tom Hush. as you've been following along on the news, you know, for weeks there have been these devastating wildfires in Australia, and now they're being hit with some really extreme weather. Storm system that includes hail and dust, flash floods, making even more damage and making it even more difficult to fight the wildfires, really going through some crazy stuff in Australia. So we thought we would stop over there and get Barclay Crawford on. He's an editor at the Daily Mail Australia, just to catch up and find out what's going on and what's the latest. Barclay, welcome.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, Nick.
Yeah. So let's find, where are we at right now? What's the latest? We've heard about the wildfires for all these weeks, and now this really crazy weather that is hitting Australia. Where is Australia at right now in this regard?
Right. Well, we still have at least 20 fires burning out of control in Australia. But I mean, what happened this week after? Well, it's been really the fires have been going since October, and obviously it's the Australian summer doesn't really start properly to December. So it was 2 months before summer proper the fires started. We knew this was going to happen because of the sort of like a horrific drought. A lot of the east coast of Australia has been in this horrific drought for a couple of years now, and so the build up of fuel it was always going to happen, but no one sort of predicted how bad it was. So these fires, they've burnt out, I think, about 10 million hectares already, which is about, I'd put it into some perspective, it's probably about a third of the size of Germany or about the size of the UK. Size of England in terms of geography. But we had those. They raised about 2,500 homes and killed 27 people so far.
And the animal population as well.
Oh, decimated. Yeah. A billion animals, reckon. Yeah. I mean, but there's great fears that the koala is heading for extinction in the wild now. I mean, 25% of its habitat was destroyed. We had rainforest areas that have never burned before. 35% of them were wiped out. I mean, the fires are unprecedented. It's quite extraordinary. I mean, fire's always been part of Australia and part of Australian summer. I mean, it's kind of like the famous poem by Dorothy McKellar that says, "We love a sunburnt country, a land of burning fires and flooding plains." And that's kind of how it rolls. And so after the fires, of course, followed the floods. And it was like in Queensland, there was areas being hit by, 11 inches of rain in your term of your terms, or 320 millimetres of rain, causing massive flash floods and devastation everywhere. But then this week, to sort of top it all off, these sort of supercells formed and lashed Melbourne, Canberra, and large parts of Sydney with hailstones, which were often the size of tennis balls and golf balls, and they caused at least 300 million worth of damage, but it's going to be a lot more than that, you know what I mean? Like, they smashed into the Parliament House. There was Australia's scientific government body, the CSIRO, has announced that the damage caused by the water from the hailstones smashing up a lot of their scientific operations. They'll never get the damage back. So that's kind of like just followed on from the fires and the floods. We suddenly get these hailstorms that have wreaked havoc through the place, and you would have seen a lot of the extraordinary photos of cars crashed, houses crashed, all these big chunks of ice that have come out of the sky. It's been a brutal summer. We're calling it the angriest summer we've ever had.
Mm. And how are people holding up? Is there a general feeling of how people are holding up during all of this?
I'll tell you what, mate. It's been a bit of an eye-opener for Australians, you know. It's sort of, Australia's has been a bit complacent about climate and about weather and so forth. And the debate's kind of not been as, I guess a lot of parts of the world that they've kind of accepted that climate change is a thing and it's all happening. But out here, Australians are very, been pretty sceptical of it. And while we remain sceptical, it's certainly stirred up a hornet's nest of debate about whether or not this is now climate scientists sort of said that Australia would be at the forefront of climate change. You know what I mean? Like, because of the weather extremes here, that we would be the first to feel it. Like, it's the driest continent in the world on the planet for a start. But we sort of hadn't really. Our country's built on carbon. You know what I mean? Coal resources, coal resources, and stuff like that, and a lot of people's jobs and livelihoods rely on it. So it's kind of been one that we haven't really dealt with or talked about properly. But because of this, it's really sparked off a huge debate about climate change and whether we're doing enough. And this is in the middle of our summer, which is traditionally you know, it's a go slow period. Everyone's at the beach and or camping or something, you know. But because of the fires and just the sheer scale of them, and then the extreme weather conditions we've experienced, it's really sort of fired people up on all sides of the debate.
Yeah.
But you know, mate, generally people are concerned. You know, they're concerned about this, and they feel sorry for what's happened. They feel sad that the devastation wrought on all these animals, on people losing their home, people losing their lives. I mean, they're extraordinary scenes. I don't know if you saw them, where a small coastal town in a quite remote part of the southeast coast down to Victoria, like, there were 4,000 people on the beach for 24 hours as the skies turned red, and they had to get the Navy in to take them off the beach. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. A full-on evacuation, like a war, because you just couldn't get out of there. They were surrounded by fire. Yeah. So, mate, it's been definitely one that's it's sparked a lot of debate here. I think. Maybe the best way to put it.
Yeah. It's Nick DiGilio here on the Nick DiGilio Show, we are talking with Barclay Crawford, who's an editor at the Daily Mail Australia, about the horrible, devastating wildfires and now the insane weather that's hitting Australia. Barclay, there's been a lot of backlash against Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison. Where does the Australian the Australian government stand at this point, and how are people feeling about him?
Well, mate, I tell you what, it's been a real wake up call for him, because it all started when he decided, as this crisis just started to mount, the fire, like, we realised it was serious, these fires, he snuck off on holiday to Hawaii.
Oh.
Hawaii of all places, not even somewhere in Australia, but to Hawaii, and to make it worse, his staff wouldn't tell anyone where he'd gone, and they were sort of citing protocol, going, "Oh, you know, we can't tell you for protocol reasons." But that just caused outrage amongst Australians, going like, "A, mainly because he snuck off, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And then B, was he going to Hawaii? You know what I mean? Like, at the time, Sydney had worse air quality than Beijing because of these fires that were burning everywhere, and there was a real sense that, mate, you should be here. I don't know, at least handing out tea or comforting people or doing something, not taking off on holiday in Hawaii."
Yeah.
And that's really been a wake-up call for him as a president. And, mate, he's seen his popularity hit massively already. I mean, he was sort of seen as a kind of a knockabout Aussie here. I mean, people were sort of thought he was one of them. And the Labor government that he... so he's from the Conservative side of politics, I guess. And,
okay.
And the Labor government, which was... They were a shoo-in to win. Everyone thought the Labor government was going to win, but Australia, the media commentators hadn't sort of predicted that Australians just don't like super progressive governments, and they had all these schemes to make Australia, you know, reduce their carbon emissions by 50% and make everyone drive electric cars and another bunch of taxing policies that no one wanted. So
Right. Harrison
won. But I think he's gone for that old thing in politics where you think that you won rather than the other guy lost.
Right.
But he's struggled ever since, mate. Like, I mean, and so everyone's picking up every little thing that he does. I mean, he's been abused when he's turned up to fire zones. So, you know, he's turning up for a photo opportunity sort of thing, and every little thing that he's doing is being picked up. And mate, he's had a rough run, a lot of it's been his own doing.
Yeah,
be brutally frank.
Barclay Crawford is with us.
I don't know whether Australian political stuff of interest to you guys over there, but that's just the case of what it's been. I mean, I know it must seem pretty far away, I guess, Australia, but it's been a really big story here, and I have noticed it's been around the world.
It has. Barclay Crawford, editor at Daily Mail Australia. It's the Nick DiGilio Show. One last question before we let you go, Barclay. When this all does calm down, and eventually it will, what's next? What's the plan? Is there rebuilding? Is there going to be money given to make things, you know, better in the areas that have been so devastated by it?
Well, mate, there's been an unprecedented outpouring of support, financial support from across the world.
Yeah.
And so there's no doubt that there will be a lot of rebuilding and you know, a lot of money will go to trying and sorting out the wildlife issues we have. I mean, I noticed that Serena Williams in her Australian Open game, she had her nails painted with the koalas. I mean, there's been a lot of there will be a lot of introspection about it. They're saying they'll have a royal commission into it, so a commission of inquiry to look at why it happened and how they can stop it again. I mean, but at the end of the day, mate, you know what's going to happen? We're all sort of used to this now. There'll be crazy rains. There's been so much bush that's been burnt out that it'll be another 5 years and it'll all happen again.
Yeah, wow.
It's just kind of how it goes in Australia. But there will be some changes, and I would like to think we might get a bit more rational and sensible debate about climate in this country and how it affects us. You know what I mean? We'll come to the middle a bit more. You know what I mean? Rather than being on the extremes of no, it doesn't happen, or yes, it does.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is it. And everybody around the world, Barclay, is thinking of Australia and sending out great thoughts and money. And giving money to help it out, and I encourage people to donate as much as they can to help this out. It's a beautiful place, and I want to thank you for joining me. And the best of luck to everybody there.
Thank you so much, Nick. Much appreciated.
All right, take care, Barclay Crawford, editor at Daily Mail Australia. Obviously, you know, this story has hit everyone around the entire world. And it touches on many, many, many issues. And we obviously here at WGN follow all the world news, and we'll keep an eye on what's happening and wish the best for everybody in Australia. And if you can give money, give money. You should do that. Going to need all the help that they can get. Devastating stuff happening in Australia. Okay. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. The show continues with Paul Farivar. He is a comedian and a lawyer. Everyone's a lawyer. He's got a show called at the Laugh Factory Theater in Chicago. It's on Sunday, January 26th. We'll talk about that and more. Paul's been on the show before. We'll have a lot of fun with him. Nick DiGilio show continues right here on 720 WGN here until 4 a.m. And at 4 o'clock, we have our good friends over at Bradley Place. The WGN TV Early Morning News is simulcast right here from 4 to 5. And then at 5 o'clock, the great Bob Surratt. So stay tuned. That's what's coming up. It's the Nick DiGilio show continuing. Tom Hush is the producer. I'm your host. And we want to welcome to the show now. Oh, by the way, who requested it? It's a 2 for Tuesday, everybody. That's when you request all the music, one artist, two songs. We play them. Who requested the Bowie?
That's coming to us from Rebecca.
Rebecca. All right. So we'll hear another Bowie song. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Live in studio joining me right now again, he's been on the show before, is Paul Farivar. And let me get your mic up there. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Nick. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. How you doing?
Good, good.
Good, good, good. Paul's got a show called Everyone's a Lawyer. It's at the Laugh Factory in Chicago, which is at 3175 North Broadway. Sunday, January 26th at 7 p.m. We've talked about this show before here, and you are a lawyer.
I was a full-time practicing lawyer for a while, and now I'm just kind of part-time, and then soon to be retired.
But you're taking that that experience of being a lawyer and combining it with your experience as a comedian.
Yeah, so like I was pitching a lot of shows to networks, and someone took me aside. They're like, you should pitch something that only you can do so that you are attached to it forever. And so I came up with this game show where comedians act as lawyers. We give them real legal issues that are in the news, and then they analyze it. We have different components of the law, which is like legal issues that are in the news, like, is that right? You know, things like dodgeball being banned. And then we have a gauntlet of things that they have to do, one of which is defend the undefendable, which is defending something that's impossible to defend for a comedian. And it's fun to watch them struggle. And then we have audience questions as well. So it's a fun time.
So it's this Sunday, the 26th, 7 o'clock. Again, at the Laugh Factory, Everyone's a Lawyer. Tell us about the people that are going to be part of it.
So this month we have Sarah Perry, who won it once before last year. We took a three-month hiatus, and she was one of the last winners. David Carter, another comedian from Chicago, he won it the very last time. And we had Joe McMahon, who has won it about 10 times now.
Oh, really?
But he's on hiatus, so we brought back the prior champion that won it three times, which was Derek Smith. All up-and-coming comedians. There's a rhyme and reason to why we pick the people we pick. You know, there's an up-and-comer. We always have you know, an underdog, obviously, like if you think of the game show format. And then we have someone that's an intellect, and then we have a goofball. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to see who the audience roots for and to win.
So the audience is the jury, essentially.
Absolutely. At the end, the winner is decided by a round of applause. The jury decides, and they have closing arguments too, where they could you know, roast the other comedians or, you know, talk about the stuff that came up during the game.
When are they told what the topics are going to be? Are they told, can they prepare, or is this just, or are they, did they get thrown right in during the show?
It's a little of both. So we have segments that are prepared that they have in advance, that that they know what the topics are, but the audience questions are not prepared.
Sure.
That's all natural. And then if something happened, you know, in the 48 hours before, we tell them what we think we're going to talk about, and something happens in the news that
sure.
we have to address.
Sure.
Those are covered as well. So it's a combination of people that are, it's a skill set for people that are great writers and great riffers.
Okay. So. But it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN, and we're live here. And Paul Farivar is with us, and everyone's a lawyer at the Laugh Factory. Sunday, January 26th at 7 o'clock. Sounds like a lot of fun. And now, first of all, how long did you practice law?
About 17 years. I was part-time for a while, and then I went full-time in 2008. So roughly about 17 years on and off.
And when did you finally go, look, I'm not going to do this full-time anymore, I want to do comedy? And how did comedy enter into this whole situation?
Wow. That's the compound question, Nick, but I'll allow it. 2016 is when I left my law firm where I was a partner to practice part-time and then focus on comedy. And I got into comedy by accident. You know, I was helping another comedian friend who was opening for Bob Saget, and we were backstage. It was after the Cubs home opener, and I was backstage talking to Bob, and because I had no stress on me. My friend was nervous opening for him.
Sure.
And I was just back there talking. He thought I was one of the comedians going up. He goes, "Oh, are you going to go tell that story?" I told him a story which I don't remember to this day because it was a Cubs home opener and I had been drinking. And I said, no, I'm not the comedian. I know you think I look like him a little bit, but it's not me. He goes, "Well, you should go up and do something." I'm like, "I've never done stand-up. I'm not going to go up to a sold-out show at this casino for the first time." And then he said, "You should. That's a funny story I want to riff off." And I'm like, "I'm not going up." And everyone in the room starting to try to get me to do it. Mike Toomey was there, too, trying to get me to do it. And I don't know if they were serious or not, but in my head, I was like, that gave me the confidence. I was always thinking about doing it, and then the next day, I went to an open mic and I did it, and I got hooked, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the short.
It's such an original story, though. I mean,
it's
true, 100%
true. It's 100%
true, but it's just unusual.
Yeah,
I like the fact that you are now, you know, incorporating the lawyer side of it into what you do and the material that you do.
Yeah, it gives me a different point of view. It separates me from other comedians. You know, I'm on the road. I just got back from two and a half weeks on the road. Doing shows, and it's fun to, you know, when I reveal that I'm a lawyer on stage, sometimes it's fun to see people react. They think it's a bit, and it's not.
It's not a bit. Okay. No. Paul Farivar is with us, we're talking about Everyone's a Lawyer, and we've got some point-counterpoint argument stuff that you
sure.
and I are going to do a little bit later on that might reflect what people might see when
sure.
they come to see your show.
We have that, yeah.
So, all right, let's do this. We're gonna continue talking with Paul. And we will continue talking to you at 312-981-7200 as the show continues. The Nick DiGilio Show continues right here on 720 WGN. Through 4 a.m., as we do every weekday night into the morning, 11 p.m. to 4 a.m. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. I'm your host, Nick DiGilio. Tom Hush is our producer, and our guest in studio right now is Paul Farivar, Paul, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Comedian and lawyer, and puts together a show called Everyone's a Lawyer at the Laugh Factory in Chicago. It's once a month, correct?
Yeah, we do it once a month. We took a couple months off.
For the holidays and stuff, yeah. Okay. So it's the next one is Sunday, January 26th at 7 p.m., featuring Sarah Perry, David Carter, and I've got the...
Derek Smith.
Derek Smith.
Yep.
Is there. So... also, you still doing your podcast Singles Only?
Yeah, we have two podcasts now. One is Singles Only, which is we're approaching our 200th episode.
Wow.
About dating, and it's been awesome. And then the other one we're hoping to get you on is Make Us a Mixtape with Mari DeRosa.
Oh, right.
We do five songs, talk about music, mm-hmm. and argue.
Yeah. Well, that happens when you talk about music.
Yeah.
It really does. It really does. Singles Only. Tell everybody about that one first.
It's a podcast. We interview people that are single, mostly comedians, actors, and people who have interesting stories about being single. Whether we've had everyone from, you know, young 20-year-olds that are single to widowers, everyone telling their story about being single, their journey, and why they're single. And I always argue that it's good to be single.
Yeah. Well, I can identify with that.
There you go. We got to get you on there.
So, the other one that you host, the music one, the mixtape.
Make us a mixtape. Yep.
How long you been doing that one?
It's a new one. We just started it in September. Labor Day was our first one, mm-hmm. and it's been a blast. We've had some fun discussions hearing. It's fun, you know, you think you know somebody's music style, and then they come on and they give you their mixtape and you hear their stories and you're like, man, it seems like you would have good taste in music.
Are there...
And then the other way, too, there's people that surprise you. You know, we've had people who are in their, you know, early 20s that have a great, in my opinion, great musical taste. Yeah. You know?
And now, are there rules to this mixtape?
The only rule is it's only five songs.
It could be the same artist.
We had a guest on, a DJ who just did Chicago bands, Chicago mm-hmm. theme songs that are people that, for comedians, what they go up to or what they do to prepare. Mm-hmm. Songs from 1990. It could be anything.
Yeah. Wow, that's fun. Yeah. That sounds like a fun podcast. Are these all available at iTunes?
Yep, they're all available there.
All right, check them out at iTunes. And what's your website?
Paul F. Comedy. Everything's on there. My clips, my YouTube page, everything.
Okay. PaulFComedy.com. So you've got the Everyone's a Lawyer at the Laugh Factory. Are mm-hmm. you doing any? Are you doing any sets here?
Yeah, I was just at Zany's tonight, opening
sure.
for Adam Burke, mm-hmm. who crushed it. This weekend. I'm back. I was out of town. I was in Las Vegas last week. The Tropicana mm-hmm. With John Campanera.
Oh, sure.
It was fun. And then I was in Reno with Greg Morton the week before. And then this week I'm back in Chicago. I'm at the Laugh Factory Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Right. So
I opened for John.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. At Zany's. He's funny, man.
It was fun. We had a fun weekend. Yeah. And we hung out. My flight was at 6 a.m. today or earlier.
Yeah.
So he stayed up with me and Rich Hall. Rich Hall came on.
Yeah.
I had the greatest night just listening to them tell
Absolutely.
Stories.
Absolutely. Those guys are both great.
Amazing time.
Yeah, very cool.
I hung out with them until I had to get on my plane, which was really cool.
So we got all this stuff going on. PaulFComedy.com if you want to follow them and you want to check it out. And Everyone's a Lawyer is at 7 o'clock on Sunday at the Laugh Factory in Chicago. Okay, since the last time you were here, Neil Peart died.
Yeah.
Near Peart. If you want to be Peart. Correct about it. Drummer for Rush, which is a band that you absolutely love.
Absolutely.
And that Tom and I both absolutely love. And we did a tribute to Neil earlier in the week. And this was a rough one, man. When I heard about this, nobody knew he was sick.
No.
Tell me about how you started. How did your love for Rush begin?
So my older brother obviously influenced all the music taste I had, and he and my cousin were big Rush fans, and my cousin was a drummer, and he would play me Rush when I was young.
Yeah.
And then my brother bought Power Windows, and then I got obsessed listening to that album, mm-hmm. The vinyl.
Sure.
And I still have his version. And then as I got older, it was one of those bands that... you know, were timeless because they'd be on tour almost every year.
Yeah.
And you could go with your friends, you know, from when I was in eighth grade till I was in college. You get to see them almost every year.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Yeah. So, and a lot of people crap on the newer stuff or whatever, the albums after Power Windows, but I was telling you off the air, Presto and Roll the Bones are my two favorite albums.
Those are terrific records.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, it's not just a lot of people crapping on the later stuff. A lot of people crap on Rush in general.
Yeah, that's
like,
true, too.
They
get a bad rap.
They get a terrible rap, and they're a fantastic band.
Yeah.
And you know, I remember telling people that I liked Rush, and they were, you know, like, there would be music snobs would be like, what the hell is wrong with you? And I'd be thinking to myself, well, first of all, if you don't like Rush, that's fine. You know what I mean? Like, if you don't think the music, it's not your type of thing, but you can't deny the musicianship of that band.
Absolutely. They are the hard, the way I was in 14 bands in my lifetime, and we never covered a Rush song because you can't cover Rush.
Yeah.
You can, but it's hard.
Yeah. It's really hard. I mean, like, Neil Peart was one of the greatest drummers that ever lived, ever.
Easily.
Geddy Lee is unbelievable on the bass.
Yeah.
Like, incredible. And Alex Lifeson is a fantastic guitarist.
And the vocals, too. Geddy has a...
They are... The musicianship in that band, you can't argue that.
No.
If you don't like the band, you don't like the material, all right, that's fine.
On one of the podcasts, we came up with the ICP theory. When people find out that you like a song, they automatically dismiss... Or like a band, they dismiss you. Like, when someone's like, oh, I listen to Insane Clown Posse, and you're like, oh... I just wasted 5 minutes talking to you.
Well, hold on there, Paul.
I'm just saying, but my friend who, Maddie Ryan, who was on, was saying the same thing about Fish. The same thing applies to Rush. When people think that you're a big Rush fan, they automatically assume that they can't listen to anything else you say.
No,
and it's not fair because I'm not a prog rock guy. I listen to everything, but there's something unique and special that everybody liked.
Yeah.
If you or hate it, I guess.
Yeah. It's the Nick DiGilio show right here on 720 WGN. Paul Farivar is with us. He's a comedian. Everyone's a Lawyer at the Laugh Factory is on Sunday. And we are here right now. Tom Hush is producing, and I am your host here on 720 WGN. Where would you put Rush? Where would you rank them in the pantheon of rock bands?
I think that they're pioneers. I would put them as a pioneer of the prog rock scene, I guess, for lack of a better word. And you said one of the greatest drummers. I think that Neil is the greatest drummer.
Yeah.
If you listen to other drummers, they'll tell you Bill Bruford and Neil Peart are the ones that they say.
Yeah.
Always.
I agree. I they're both, you know, I'm a Bonham guy. I'm a John Bonham guy. That's just because, like, I was much younger when I got into Zeppelin than I got into Rush, and I played drums, and Bonham was kind of my hero.
That's like a style thing.
Yeah.
He's a unique.
Yeah. Oh, he's different. He's a completely different drummer than Neil Peart. They're completely different in terms of style. And, you know, I mean, Neil Peart was meticulous.
Right.
And Bonham was just slamming stuff.
Yeah. It's just like a style. You know, there are certain guitarists. I'm a guitarist that are amazing guitarists, technically speaking.
Yeah.
But there are other guitarists who are just, they have such a unique rhythm or style that's where I categorize Bonham. But Neil Peart was technically the great, you know.
Yeah.
You can't do what he did.
No, you can't.
And it was mostly physical. He had a physical strength.
Yeah. We're talking about Rush because Paul loves Rush, and we just lost Neil. And so I wanted to make sure we talked about that.
Absolutely. Yeah.
When we come back, we're going to talk about more of Everyone's a Lawyer. And then I got some point counterpoint things that we'll do, have some fun with.
Sure.
See if we can check out that. And Paul Farivar is with us, and we're continuing the show here on 720 WGN.
It's all behind me, there's good luck up ahead. Can't break what's left of my heart. Once bitten, twice shy. This time it feels so good, I hate to see it fall apart.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live here, and we're continuing the show.
Was that Foghat?
It was at
Foghat.
It was Foghat. Good call, Paul. Paul Farivar. Who keeps requesting Foghat?
Well, a lot of times I'm just playing Foghat for
Foghat's
sake, but that one's coming to us from Steve.
So Steve is enjoying a little Foghat.
Yeah, who doesn't love a little Foghat?
I saw Foghat live. I did, back in the 70s, late 70s, when their album Foghat Live is a groundbreaking live album. I mean, that was a huge record.
I don't think I'd ever go see them.
I think you speak for the majority of people. It's Nick DiGilio here. We're live in the Skyline studio here till 4 o'clock. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Paul Farivar is with us, and everyone's a lawyer is at the Laugh Factory, and it's the Sunday the 26th at 7 o'clock. How is this? What's the format? How is it set up?
So I host the show. I bring up comedians. They do a quick set of their stand up, kind of like an opening arguments. And then we bring them up on a panel format. And then we do the beginning section, which is usually, is that right? Or what do you think about things that are in the news that are legal issues or a case that really happened? Nothing that's too controversial, but things that they can weigh in on. Mm. And then we go into a segment where defending Florida, something that Florida man did. They defend that person. And then then we have a trial where something that happened, we had recently Cardi B was sued. Someone defends Cardi B. Someone is the person bringing the lawsuit against Cardi B, and someone's the record label. So then it's a trial situation. And then we do defend the undefendable, which is things that are hard to defend. Defend R. Kelly, defend the presidents, and you know, everything. We try to stay away from politics, but obviously it's part of the show.
Yeah.
And then we do audience questions. People put in their questions. Legal. Sometimes people think it's a real legal show, and they bring in how to beat a DUI, things like that. And you're like, these guys aren't real lawyers. And
can you help me out, buddy?
Yeah. And then then we have sometimes we do like they come up with their own commercials, jingles, if they had a jingle. Usually it's a theme callback to what happened in the show. And then closing arguments, which is they basically say why they should win and more importantly, why the other two people should lose, which is where the roasting.
Do the arguments ever get heated?
Oh, yeah. We've had some really personal stuff where it's fun. I mean, but, you know, it's all in fun. We all are generally friends or comedy friends. Yeah. So.
All right, cool. Again, that's Everyone's a Lawyer at the Laugh Factory in Chicago on Sunday, January 26th. So, Tom, you're going to participate in some of this point-counterpoint stuff here. Tom came up with this list of point-counterpoint.
Oh,
and we're going to...
Tom knows me well.
We're going to go into, you know, talking about... We'll each take a position, even if we...
Sometimes you have to defend things you don't believe. That's another segment we have.
Defend things that you don't believe, Okay. Well,
as a lawyer, you do it all the time.
Here's the verses. We have a verses here. And it's the classic one. Beatles versus Rolling Stone.
Sure.
Okay. So, Tom, what's your take on this?
I'm going to say Rolling Stones.
Okay.
I'm going to say Rolling Stones because they rock harder. And they oozed sex appeal. And honestly, I think when it comes to the songwriting, got a little bit more down and dirty. Beatles, they did some weird psychedelic stuff, but Stones are a rock band, man.
Okay. All right. What do you believe?
I will just take the counterpoint. I think it's interesting that Tom Hush, if that's your real name, would argue that they are good songwriters when most of their songs were basically written by Chicago blues artists.
Isn't that really?
Well, the early part of their career.
And a lot of that, well, we don't know, but some of the stuff allegedly was written by Mick Jagger and Keith Richards. But if you're talking about songwriting, I mean, Paul McCartney and John Lennon have written more songs that are popular than any other. I mean, they poop hits. Literally, you can't, those guys together in a room, if they were together now, would have more hits than all of Beyonce, Taylor Swift, everyone combined.
Yeah.
So they may not rock harder, but they're still the greatest band of all time.
For those reasons, and because the Beatles, their output was there, and it's amazing too because they were only around for like 9 years. The Beatles were only around
for 9 years. People forget that.
Yeah, and what they accomplished in that 9 years is jaw dropping. And And I agree. I think Lennon and McCartney are two of the greatest songwriters that ever lived. And again, it's not that I dislike the Rolling Stones, because I don't. I love the Rolling Stones.
I do too. I love them.
They're great. I think they've been around a little too long in terms of, like, I don't like their new material. I stopped liking them right around Dirty Work.
Steel Wheels.
Steel Wheels has moments.
Mixed emotions, yeah.
But no, I'm going Beatles all the way.
I got to throw to Paul, to your point about those songs. I also remember when Lennon and McCartney wrote Please, Mr. Postman, right?
Yeah.
Come on. Twist and Shout. Yeah, no, I got
Let's
you.
Let's not bring up Zeppelin, because that will do.
Well, that's a whole nother.
Yeah. The great thing about Lennon and McCartney is that I think they worked great together. They also were great on their own, obviously, but yeah. I feel like there was clearly an influence on certain songs where it's like, okay, that was the part Lennon came up with, and that's the part.
Well,
and that's why they worked.
It's interesting to watch the trajectory of the Beatles, because you can tell when they split apart. Like, yeah, the White Album, that's a George song,
right?
That's
exactly
a John song. That's a Paul song. Paul Farvarar is with us, and he has a show that he does at the Laugh Factory called Everyone's a Lawyer, where people defend things and talk about things. So, all right, let's do the next one. Are you ready? Mm-hmm. Al Pacino versus Robert De Niro. All right, let's start with you, Tom.
I'm going to go De Niro.
Okay.
For longevity, and I think he's done less bad performances overall than Al Pacino. Both of them have dipped into the world of horrendous self-parody in various different ways, but I think Robert De Niro has put in more great performances over a longer period of time. Al Pacino is kind of restricted to, I would say, about 1995. Last great performance in Heat.
Oh, God.
There it is.
It's one of his it's one of his worst performances. All right, where are you going, Paul?
That's hard. I wanted De Niro too, but just for the sake, because I'm such a good lawyer, I will say Pacino. You know what? I just think Pacino, when he shines brighter than De Niro. I think De Niro's made more content, but I also just think Al Pacino's had some great classics that are unforgettable. Scarface being one of them. Scent of a Woman. I mean, those are two of my favorite movies. And, you know, I think De Niro, you know, he's just getting too political. You just got to focus on your art. You know, that's, I'm just going to argue that for Pacino's sake, even though I like De Niro better.
Okay. I'm a Pacino guy.
Okay.
I would take Pacino. I think De Niro has done a lot more bad movies than Pacino has. Dirty Grandpa being one of them.
Oh, yes.
But and I think De Niro has coasted more than Pacino. Pacino might have given him some terrible performances by going over the top and screaming, like in Heat, or doing some bad movies or making bad choices, like what's the one where Adam Sandler plays twins?
Oh, Jack and Jill.
Right.
I was gonna say, do I need to bring out the Dunkachino audio?
Yeah. So, but I still think Pacino has more. I think he's got better work under his belt, less laziness on the part of Pacino, and some of the performances that Al Pacino has given. I mean, his performance in Dog Day Afternoon is one of my favorite performances in the history of
great
film.
Movie.
That stretch that he did in the '70s with Serpico and all that stuff that he did with Lamette, all those, you know, I mean, that it's, you know, and the comedy, he's in The Godfather. He's in both De Niro's in Godfather Part Two. But he's in both Godfathers, and they're great. The Corleone performance, Michael Corleone performance is fantastic. Scarecrow, Panic in Needle Park. The stuff that he did up until, you know, you mentioned Scarface, which is one of my favorite movies ever.
Yeah.
He came back big time with a movie called Sea of Love with Ellen Barkin back in 1989, and he hadn't really been seen a lot. He did a horrible film called Revolution with the director of Chariots of Fire, which almost ended his career. And he was gone for a while, but he had this comeback with Sea of Love. And then he also had a big hit with Frankie and Johnny. Again, with him and Michelle Pfeiffer, based on the play. And by the way, they're both great in The Irishman. Let's just say that right now.
I haven't seen it.
They're both phenomenal. Pesci steals it, but they're both great in it.
Okay.
So I gotta argue Pacino.
What's the movie he was in where he's like, I'm out of order, you're out of order?
That's why it's And Justice for All. How can I forget? That's one of my favorite performances.
That's a great movie.
I love that movie. Yeah.
I quote that often, and that gets quoted sometimes on the show Everyone's a Liar, where people just start making ridiculous
arguments. All right, real quick one. Rush in the 70s versus Rush in the 80s. Tom?
All right, I'll go devil's advocate, and I'm going to say
devil's Rush... advocate, Al Pacino.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, great.
Jeez.
Good callback.
I'm going to say Rush in the 80s, even though I prefer Rush in the 70s. Rush in the 80s did an amazing job of pushing forward pop music and taking stuff like new wave, taking stuff like synth tinged pop and pushing it into stranger directions, always a little bit off kilter while still making their sound very palatable to an even wider audience. I mean, and let's be honest here, the best and most accessible Rush album is Moving Pictures. And that's when they started that journey into taking the 80s sound and adapting it to what they were doing. It's slightly less pretentious. It's slightly more accessible for the greater audience. And I think a lot of people, like Paul admitted earlier, got into Rush during that period because of it.
So you would probably say the 80s, right, Paul?
I would even say 90s, because didn't Roll the Bones come out in 91? Yeah, so I'm gonna play
you big counterpoints guy?
Counterpoint.
Counterpoint.
Their greatest album didn't happen until 1991.
Okay. All right, I'm going 70s. although my favorite Rush album is Moving Pictures, which was 81, but I still kind of count that as 70s. But, no, you know, I mean, I love 70s Rush. I mean, I could listen to 21, 12, 24 hours a day, and I just love, I love Caress of Steel. I love Fly By Night. The 70s stuff is, to me, my favorite.
I just like the studio work they did with Presto and Roll the Bones.
Yeah.
I really think almost all the songs are great. You know, obviously Roll the Bones, you got to forgive Getty for the rap section that they did.
Right.
For 52 seconds.
Exactly. Everyone's a Lawyer is at the Laugh Factory Sunday, January 26th at 7 o'clock. Paul Farivar is here. PaulFComedy.com is the website.
Yep. We get discount tickets there if you're listening. If you message me, I'll give you free tickets to the show.
There you go. All right. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks for having me.
It's a lot of pleasure, a lot of fun. And thanks for doing the counterpoint, lawyer stuff here. A little example of what you might see on Sunday at the show. Okay. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are going to continue by talking about radio. Yesterday was National DJ Day. So we're going to talk about some of the best radio jocks of all time. And the news is up 312-981-7200. The Nick DiGilio Show continues here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Skyline studio here till 4 o'clock. I'm your host, Nick DiGilio, and Tom Hush is the producer. That's another example of Two for Tuesday. You mean Two for Tuesday? Here's the deal. Every night and morning, you pick the songs that we play coming back from breaks and news. And we have a theme every morning, a different theme every morning. Today is Two for Tuesday. That means you pick one artist and two songs by that artist, request them, we play them. And who requested that?
That's coming to us from Steve, a little bit more Foghat.
Right. Foghat. Okay.
You're really amused by the name Foghat.
Well, it's just, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I was a fan of them when I was younger, like in the 70s. So, well, yesterday was National DJ Day. So we're going to talk about some of the all-time great DJs. And I also want to talk about some of our favorite local DJs from Chicago, because we had some legendary jocks in this town. Still have great DJs in this town, but there's the stuff that I grew up on, like in the 70s and in the early 80s and so on. There are just some absolute true rock jock legends, and this city was full of them. Now, the ones that I have in front of me here, this is from an article from CNN, where they're talking about some of the all-time great DJs nationwide. You know what I mean? So nobody in this article is from Chicago or worked local Chicago radio. These were all, they all became, you know, very popular among that. But I do also want to mention some of the local jocks here in Chicago. And so we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Talk and text. Send your text in, too. Your favorite local jocks and so on and so forth. 312-981-7200. So I've mentioned many times on this show for several years, there was a guy that I used to listen to who was on he was on WMET and a couple of other stations, and his name was Captain Whammo. And you hear me, Captain Whammo, yeah! Captain Whammo was a guy that I listened to in the 70s. He was Captain Whammo, and he had the Whammo Lion. Like, call up the Whammo Lion. And so I've talked about him many, many times on the show, and I think that, there are air checks available online of Captain Whammo. Have we talked about Captain Whammo? Have I talked about Captain Whammo with you?
Yeah, we talked about it a long time ago. I feel like when I first started.
Yeah.
We're getting into some Whammo.
Yeah, man, Captain Whammo, yeah! And that's another thing that you hear with jocks is this. There's a lot of reverb when you're a jock. But his real name was Jim... I'm forgetting his last name. His first name was Jim.
Jim Channel?
Jim Channel, yeah. Jim Channel.
Yeah.
And so when I first started working the weekend overnight shifts, and I had my own show, and I had a show with Gary Lee Wright, we were talking about radio personalities that we loved or that we thought were awesome. And I, of course, brought up Captain Whammo, because Captain Whammo was, I listened to him. When I listened to him, he did evenings. He was on from, I think, 6 to 10. I think 6 to 10. And my friends and I would listen to him. And he would ask people to call up and say, "Hey, man, this is Captain Whammo. Call up the Whammo Lion." And he would get two syllables out of the word line. So it was the Whammo Lion. He would solicit jokes. He would want people to call in and tell jokes. And I called in, told basically a lot of the jokes my dad used to tell and probably have told on this show. And I would call in and I was like, "This is Captain Whammo, what's your joke?" And I was like, "Yeah." And at that time, I was a kid, so the people called me Nicky. So he'd be like, "Yeah, Nicky. Man, what's your joke, Nicky?" And I would tell the joke, and I won all the time. And unlike now, what was it, 60 days you can't win anything?
Yeah, 60 days.
60 days. It says there's a certain level of monetary value, right?
Yeah, for prizes under like $100 or something.
Yeah. I don't think there were rules in the 70s. Because I won all the time. All the time. And so I would, you know, they would say, "You come on down to the station and pick out some albums." So I would go down to the station. They would have my information. And I would go, "Yeah, I told a joke on Captain Whammo's show. And I won some albums." And so they'd be like, "Yeah, whatever, man." Because it was the 70s. Everybody was high. They were all working at an FM station. They didn't care. So, you know, are you familiar? You're familiar with what cutouts are, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Very much.
So basically what they did was the secretary or the person who was there who greeted you, you know, you were a winner, quote unquote, they would bring out a big box of cutouts, crappiest albums you could possibly imagine. They're called cutouts because they were free. They were brought in by the record company for you to play, and they would cut the tag. They would cut a corner off of the album. So one of the corners would be cut off, or they would poke a hole in it. They would they'd put a hole in it, and those were cutouts. And a lot of record stores, they would do that, and they would cut. You know, they would do the cutout thing. So, and I mean, seriously, nothing to choose from. They're like, "Go ahead, pick three albums out of there." And so I take the box and I look through it, and there's not a bunch of crap, but I still picked three albums, and I was like, "Okay, I won these," and I'd walk out. But I mean, some of the worst prizes ever from Captain Whammo. So, but yeah, no, he's not, you know, one of the more legendary guys that have worked in this city. I mean, I personally thought he was hilarious because I listened to him when I was like 10, and I thought him screaming and acting like an idiot was the funniest thing ever. And I love that I won albums from just telling stupid jokes on the air, and I listen to him every night. But, you know, he doesn't go down in the pantheon of great Chicago jocks. I mean, I just personally think he's hilarious. Do we have any Captain Whammo?
Yeah, I got a little bit of Captain Whammo here.
Here's the Captain Whammo.
Number two with Captain Whammo, standing by with a brand new song from Styx next, right here at M.E.T.
All of Chicago's changed. It's all brand new. New thrilling rides just made for you. Come on in and smile today.
This Saturday, bring your group to the Midwest Arm Wrestling Championships at the Family Fun Capital, Old Chicago, I-55.
Oh, my God, Old Chicago.
WMET.
607 Captain Whammo, Thursday night in the Windy City. Road feels a lot better. I feel like doing the screaming and yelling tonight. In the next 240 minutes, you got 220 minutes of rock and roll. Keep it right here.
I'm not kidding. When I told my folks I wanted to be in radio, they were just that's what they thought. They were just like, "All right, so you're going to be like, hey, what's going on?"
Oh God. So Grand Illusion. So that's late. That's late because
that's from April 13th, 1978.
Okay, 78. Because so that's when Grand Illusion came out because that's the title change. So here's a new one from Styx.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. There's this band called Styx.
Well, he also used to say, you heard it in there. He's like, he would say, bringing you to the rock and roll in the Windy City. instead of city, it would be Captain Whammo live in the Windy City.
It's, you know, and I'm not trying to be rude about his craft, because clearly he was very good at what he did.
Absolutely.
I mean, you don't have to be in the Mount Rushmore of radio personalities to be good at what you do.
Yeah.
I really believe that. There's plenty of people who have been in and out of this business that maybe, you know, 100 people remember, but those 100 people remember them very fondly and worship them.
Yeah.
So I think that's great what he's doing, because it clearly made an impact on people.
Yeah. It made an impact on me. And but see, the thing is, I really love bad FM rock jocks. I love those cliches. I love the, yeah, man! I love that stuff. Always have, always will. The goofier, the better. The more reverb, the crazier the voice. I mean, you heard that.
Yeah.
I love that stuff. I love it. Yeah, man, Windy City. Captain Whammo and the Whammo Lion. I love that stuff, man. I got to say, the cornier the rock jock cliches are, the better. The more reverb, the more goofy voice. So, all right. 312-981-7200. We've got some of the best great DJs of all time. And so we want you to call in at 312-981-7200. All right. And we're talking about jocks nationwide and, of course, Chicago. Who are your favorites? We want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Better than the Rolling Stones. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Skyline studio. The Nick DiGilio Show continues. And we're here till 4. Tom Hush is the producer. I'm your host. And we are talking about great DJs, some of the greatest DJs of all time. And we also want the local angle, too. Who were some of your favorite disc jockeys? We've had some great disc jockeys, including Captain Whammo, in this city. So that's what we're talking about. Yesterday was National DJ Day, so we're celebrating it by talking about local and national DJs that are legends. Who requested the Beatles?
That's coming to us from our friend Lulu.
All right, Lulu. Good choice. So DJs, what we're talking about. We were talking about the great Captain Whammo, who had some unique techniques that he would use as his as the great FM jock. And all of those wonderful FM jock cliches that that are used that I love. Love it. Grew up listening to that, and I love it. Here's Mary on WGN. Hi, Mary.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
Very good. My all-time favorite has to be Ron Britton. He was on WCFL,
yeah.
And he did cool stuff. Like, he'd have, like, little skits. He'd do drop-ins. I know you know what they are.
Yeah, I do. If I didn't know what they were, 35 years in the radio business, I probably
you'd have a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, he was my all-time favorite.
Yeah, Rod Britton was great. He truly was.
I thought he was great.
Yeah, he was great. All right, thanks.
Wally Phillips started it all, though.
Well, Wally Phillips was a legend. I mean, you want to talk
really
about drop-ins? You want to talk about the king of drop-ins? Wally Phillips was the king of drop-ins. So, Mary, thank you. Are there any air checks for Ron Britton?
We'll see if we could dig some up here.
But no, you know, Wally Phillips, legendary morning man for this here radio station. He had an engineer with a ton of carts that had different sound effects on them, and he didn't know what they were going to play. Wally would do he would do everything that you're supposed to do on the morning show, get some information, keep you entertained, get the news out there, tell you what's going on with traffic, and have some interesting guests and have some fun. But Wally, who obviously is a legend, one of the radio legends in the world, used to have so much fun with the drop-ins, with the sound effects. Like, and he wouldn't know what the engineer was going to hit. All of a sudden, boom, a drop-in would come in, a sound effect that he didn't know, and he would riff on it. Nobody was better at that than Wally Phillips. Nobody. Canadian Bill says, I used to listen to John Records' Landecker, followed by Mr. Steve King on the great WLS in the early 80s. Landecker ended up in Toronto for a couple of years, and Records really is his middle name. John Records' Landecker, who, by the way, had spent some time at this radio station, and I was thrilled to actually get to work with him. And Steve King, who, of course, is Steve King from Steve and Johnny. Steve was a great jock. Great jock. WLS, John Records, Landecker, those were the legendary. WLS was a legendary radio station. Top 40. And had great jocks, and it was at a time, it was in the 70s, and it was 60s, 70s, and 80s where I think the pinnacle of the popularity of WLS. But that time period where you're talking about John Records, Landecker, and Steve King, I listened to that all the time.
I just love it. And Records is my middle name.
It truly is my middle name.
I love that. I love what a lucky middle name, you know?
He's great.
His maiden name, wasn't
it? He's great. And his daughter, terrific actress.
Yeah, I Transparent.
She's Amy Landecker.
Landecker.
Terrific. And she's a terrific actress and does great, great work. 630 area code. I love Jonathan Brandmeier. Brandmeier did start out as just a regular sort of just a jock. And then he became, wacky morning guy personality. He played music,
yeah,
but it was mostly about the bits and the interviews and the stuff. And then it got to the point where he didn't even play music anymore. But he did start out straight up as a jock, Jonathan Brandmeier. 219 area code says the Wolfman Jack. You can't. He's a legend.
Love him in American Graffiti.
He's a legend. Wolfman Jack, legend. Host of Midnight Special. He became like an icon. Dick Biondi, oh, what a legend. Worked everywhere, too, Dick Biondi. That's a classic. That's an old school classic DJ right there. And worked, like I said, he was around forever. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. National DJ Day was yesterday. So Wolfman Jack is mentioned in this article where they talk about the all-time great DJs, kings of radio. Wolfman Jack was immortalized in a Guess Who song, Clap for the Wolfman. Though lasting fame came from his appearance in the 1973 film American Graffiti, the former Robert Smith. You mean his real name isn't Wolfman Jack?
I figured he was just born Wolfman.
First became known for being on Border Blasters, Mexico-based AM stations whose powerful signal could be heard all the way up to Canada. He later was a well-known TV personality hosting NBC's The Midnight Special. He is in the National Radio Hall of Fame. Of course he is. He's Wolfman Jack. How about this? Dino says, DJ Luscious Hushus, baby.
Oh, yeah, Luscious Hushus, baby.
Yeah. You don't know, Luscious Hushus is the DJ that spins the discs when we do Fly Jams Friday on Friday morning.
I've met him a couple times. I think he's a jerk.
773 says Herb Kent, the cool gent. Bob Stroud were two of the greatest Chicago DJs. And Bob Stroud, legend. Both of those guys. Herb Kent.
Herb Kent, the cool gent. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic. 630, Mitch Michaels. Oh, man. Mitch Michaels on the River 95.9 is pretty ridiculous. Make those good decisions. Yeah, baby. I miss WMET. Favorite memory of the Chicago Fest fireworks simulcast music every night in the summer. MET had some legendary DJs. Legendary. Yeah. So what do you guys think? 312-981-7200. The first one that's listed here in this article, where the little, it's a CNN article that they put together. They were and are your guide to the airwaves, the vinyl spinners, the blasts from the past, the paramount players of the platters that matter. Talking about some of the greatest disc jockeys of all time, great DJs. Alan Freed, you know, is credited as inventing the phrase rock and roll. Alan Freed's Moondog Matinee show gave its name to an album by the band, perhaps the first legend of the genre. The King of the Moondoggers gets credit for attaching the phrase rock and roll, a euphemism for sex, to the hybrid R&B, country, and western music he played, first in Cleveland, then in New York. The payola scandal of the late 50s ruined his career, and he died in 1965. He was just 43, and he is in the National Radio Hall of Fame. There is a movie called American Hot Wax, which is about the creation of rock and roll, has a lot of really great music in it. And I can't remember the actor who played Alan Freed, but Alan Freed was portrayed in that movie, in American Hot Wax, which as I remember, is a pretty good movie. And I just don't remember the actor's name who played Alan Freed. We'll look it up. But if you've never seen American Hot Wax and you want to see a movie about Alan Freed, about sort of the creation of rock and roll, and about, you know, what we're talking about here, DJs and stuff like that. Tom, could you look up American Hot Wax, the movie, on IMDb? And because I can't remember the guy who played Alan Freed in it. I don't think he did much. I think that's one of the only credits the guy ever had. He was an unknown actor. And I don't remember who it was. The movie was, like, I think in 1978 that movie came out.
Tim McIntyre.
Does he have any other credits?
Let's see here. He was in A Boy and His Dog.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, he was Blood.
Okay.
I don't know what that means. He did a few episodes of Soap.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I just remember him as Alan Freed.
Whoa, he's in Rich Man, Poor Man.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He's Brad Knight.
Okay. I'd probably remember him at.
So. Yeah. Well, I got to wait till it comes on again.
Yeah.
You can't watch it.
We can't watch it with the commercial. You got to watch it with the commercials like everybody else. All right. That's a reference to a movie called Beautiful Girls. Matt Dillon and Michael Rapaport have a great scene about the 1970s miniseries Rich Man, Poor Man. It is a hilarious, hilarious scene. Anybody who watched Rich Man, Poor Man back in the 70s and watches this scene in Beautiful Girls, it's hilarious. Okay. We are here. The show continues. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. We want to hear from you. We're talking about DJs nationwide and local. A lot of great local Chicago DJs from the past and present. 312-981-7200, and the show continues. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Skyline Studio as the show continues here for a Tuesday morning. That's two for Tuesday. One artist, two songs. You pick them, we play them. And that's the second of the two for the twofer of the Beatles. 312-981-7200 as the show continues. I am Nick DiGilio, your host. Tom Hush is the producer. We're keeping you company till 4 a.m. Yesterday was National DJ Day, and appreciating some of the great DJs. Both nationally and locally, and some of the great local DJs that we had and have in this in and around this town. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We would love to hear from you as the show continues. Let's go to say hello to Harold. Go ahead, Harold.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, got a national one and a local one. Used to go down to Maxwell Street with my parents. I was a kid, and well, you know, on the way there, and while you're there, people would have the radio on and listen to Casey Kasem Sunday mornings. You know,
yeah, the top 40, the top 40 countdown, Casey Kasem. Yeah,
yeah, and there was, yeah, that was everybody listened to that throughout the whole country.
Yep.
Another one was a little funny story. Used to work at nights till about 6 in the morning. And so what do you listen to? You listen to a little talk radio and a little this and that. And then, you know, I catch blues programs. And Mr. A was on. He called himself Mr. A. And there was a he'd read the weather and the traffic or whatever for the, you know, for that particular hour. And remember one day he was listening. I mean, he was reading off the weather, or maybe it was a news thing or whatever, but he was reading it off, and I hear a stack of papers hit the ground, and there's about a 10 or 15 second pause, and then you just hear him go, "We'll be right back."
yeah, those things happen, Harold. Those things happen. Yeah. All right. Hey, thanks, Harold, for the call. Casey Kasem was a legend, obviously. The top 40 countdown, what was American top 40, it was just huge, obviously. Everybody listened to it around the country. Casey Kasem's tagline, "Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars." That was his catchphrase.
Apparently he hated playing Shaggy. Apparently he did not like the show Scooby-Doo.
Well, he's really well known for being the voice of Shaggy. The former Los Angeles DJ might be the most famous voice on the list thanks to American Top 40, the national countdown show he created in 1970 and hosted on and off for more than three decades. He was also the voice of Scooby-Doo's Shaggy on the NBC television network for a period, and he is in the National Radio Hall of Fame. Of course he is. There's this, you know, classic audio. I don't know. I think he swears on it, so I don't think we can play it. But, you know, on this American Top 40, had you ever hear any audio of Casey Kasem?
Well, yeah. I mean, he was still alive because he did it pretty much forever. He did it till the day he died.
Yes.
And they still use his voice because they still do the program. I think Ryan Seacrest.
Seacrest is the host now.
He's the host, but they still use Casey Kasem
introducing
it. And I think they play back classic episodes of it at some point.
There's an outtake that you can probably find online. You might want to listen to it before we attempt to play it. But Casey Kasem is going off on the staff. He's recording American Top 40. And in between songs and stuff, Tom, he would like tell stories or read letters from listeners who would share their stories. So he's reading a story about a dead dog, about someone's dog died. And then he just came out of an up-tempo song. Like, they just played an up-tempo song on the countdown, and they hand him this note to read about this dog that died, and he goes nuts. "How am I supposed to read a song about a damn dead dog coming out of an up-tempo song?" It's a pretty legendary piece of audio. I think he may swear on it. I don't know. If you find it, there may be a censored version of it, because it's pretty classic. Did anything pop up when you Googled it? Like dead dog Casey Kasem?
Yeah, I mean, it's there. I'm going to scrub it real quick.
Okay. Sure. So that's a bit, you know, I mean, it's fantastic. It's just, but Casey Kasem just going off on these guys because these idiots gave him a letter about a dead dog. All right, let's go see who's this. Jackie's on WGN. Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
Hi.
My all-time favorite is Dr. Demento. Is he still working or even still alive?
Dr. Demento is still alive. Dr. Demento, I think his presence is strictly on the internet now. I don't think he's on air anymore. At least he's not. I know he's not in Chicago. But yeah, no, I grew up listening to Dr. Demento. I listen to him every Sunday night. Every Sunday night.
Right. Late Sunday night.
Yep.
Right.
Sunday nights on the loop, it used to be. And I would listen to it every Sunday night. And then at one point, I became his competition. When I started doing weekends, I became Dr. Demento's competition, which I always thought was surreal. since I grew up listening to it. So, yeah, I love Dr. Demento. He's great. He was the best.
Me too.
All right. Thank you, Jackie.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah, Dr. Demento. Tom, did you ever get to hear Dr. Demento?
I've heard clips.
Legend.
Yeah. That's the kind of stuff that always I used to like to listen to.
But it's the goofy stuff. Novelty stuff that he would play. He'd play comedy records and novelty records and goofy songs and stuff like fish heads, roly-poly, fish heads, fish heads, eat them up, yum.
I liked when he would play They're Coming to Take Me Away, but backwards.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, no, so many legendary novelty tunes came out of Dr. Demento, and he was very entertaining. I listened to him every Sunday night. I was obsessively... I listened to him, you know, in the 70s. It was a Sunday night. It was a Sunday night tradition. Every single Sunday night, I would listen to Dr. Demento. So 312-981-7200. How about this? Hylit was a mainstay of Philadelphia radio for decades. A leading Philadelphia DJ at the time when Philly, the birthplace of an American bandstand, was the center of the rock and roll world. Lit was a big name well into the 70s, and the kids still remember. You can hear his intro on the Mara album, Kids in Philly. Hylit. H-Y-L-I-T. Hylit. Not familiar with Hylit.
It must be pronounced Highlight.
Is it Highlight? Well, if there's no E on the end. It's H-Y and then L-I-T.
These jocks, man, and they're
maybe
silly
it is
names.
Highlight, but you know, you might want to put an E on the end or at least a GH before the T. So, did you find is the Casey Kasem is it playable? Okay. All right. So, I do. Oh, you know what I should mention? Jeez, what am I? How am I? You know. Hey, who's on at 5 o'clock this morning? Who is our morning drive guy? Come on. Legendary DJ. Bob Surratt. A great talk show host, a great news guy, great TV personality, and I grew up listening. I don't want to make Bob feel old if he's getting up right now. Maybe his alarm is going off right now. He doesn't want to hear me talking about how I used to listen to him when I was a kid. Bob Surratt, legend, a legendary DJ. Big 89? No, man. And now he's on this radio station at 5 in the morning.
I loved his work for The Onion. Did you ever see him he was in a video for The Onion doing a newsman.
No.
Oh, my God, it's hilarious.
Really? I didn't see that. But no, Tom, this is a guy that I listened to, Bob, you know, Bob Surratt. I listened to him, you know, regularly and a legendary DJ. I remember when he first got hired here, he and Marianne first got hired here. I was nervous to meet him. I was like, oh man, that's Bob Surratt. I don't know if I can meet Bob Surratt, let alone work in the same building with him. And then, you know, I now know him, worked with him for a long time, and he's not only an incredibly talented guy, very cool guy. We're so glad that we have him on here in Morning Drive. But the history that guy has in this radio business is amazing, impressive, awesome, and he was a great DJ. He was a quintessentially great DJ. And now he's a great talk show host right here on WGN. So... We can't. I'd be remiss if we're talking about great DJs, local DJs, and we don't mention our very own Bob Surratt. That's just stupid. If I didn't mention him. So, all right. Let's see. The show is continuing. We're going to try and get that Casey Kasem audio ready to go so that we can play his meltdown, which has been played on television shows and radio shows for years and years and years. It's kind of a legendary meltdown, and even he got a kick out of it when you know Casey Kasem when it leaked. And it started to get played regularly, he would make fun of it and think it was funny. So, okay, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. The show continues.
Through 66 and 7, they fought the Congo War with their fingers on their triggers, knee-deep in gore. Days and nights they battled, the band to chew their knees.
Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. The show continues here on this Tuesday morning, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And, of course, is Warren Zevon. The androgynous mustache is playing their gig tomorrow night at Space in Evanston. It's the Warren Zevon birthday bash. They do it every year. One of the greatest singer-songwriters of all time. And they'll celebrate his birthday. I highly suggest that you go check it out. It's at Space in Evanston tomorrow night. Who requested the Warren Zevon for Two for Tuesday?
That's coming to us from Dave in Monroe, Wisconsin.
Good choice, Dave. All right. We are talking about DJs. Yesterday was National DJ Day. And so in front of me, I have this article from CNN talking about some of the all-time great DJs. And we've been talking about great local disc jockeys here from Chicago. A couple of quick ones here. 847, if you want to jump in, text or talk, 312-981-7200. Nick, how about Dr. Johnny Fever and Venus Flytrap from WKRP? They're awesome. 219, what about Larry Lujack? Legend. Legend. And Larry Lujack, by the way, always had the reverb on. Oh, always. About this much reverb. Larry, Uncle Lair. Animal Stories. He used to do this thing called, Tom, do you remember Animal Stories?
I've heard the Animal Stories. I've heard about the Animal Stories.
Legendary. No, Lujack was a complete legend. There was of course there was that time when he and Stephen Gary were working on the same station. This is when Stephen Gary were on LS, and Stephen Gary, they were known to shake things up, as you know, Steve Dahl, Gary Meyer. They were known to say some things that some people would not like, and they particularly took pot shots at this radio station. Most famously, I mean, they would rip this, except for Roy Leonard. Roy was the only one who got a pass.
Yeah.
Roy was the only one who got a pass. They never said anything bad about Roy. They called him Sugar Roy. Sugar Roy Leonard.
Sugar Roy.
Yeah. But I don't know what happened, but they started talking. I don't remember the details, but Steve and Gary were doing that because they had afternoon drive, I think. Yeah, they had afternoon drive, and Lujack had mornings. He had morning drive. So they're doing their show, Steve and Gary, again, known to be outspoken and a little controversial and a little aggravating to some people. I think they started talking about Larry. They started talking about Lujack. And while on the air, Mike's live, he comes busting into the studio and goes nuts. Lujack comes busting into the studio. I don't know. I don't remember the details. I just remember Lujack came busting in screaming. You could hear him knocking stuff over and yelling. So... That's something, man. Because it's funny, you can sit, you know, because, you know, if I'm here, like, at a time when there are other people here, I'll be sitting in my office and you'll be listening. What if somebody started talking smack about me? What if, you know, like, somebody else who works in this radio station, would you ever even think of busting in on their show and start flipping tables and stuff? But when you're a legend like Larry Lujack, then I guess, you know.
Sure. I mean, we do have Nick D Show Spies every Friday.
Yes, we do.
Our own little way of flipping tables. We can comment.
We can, yeah. But I've never busted in on somebody's show and started going nuts. But again, Larry Lujack, legend.
Mm-hmm.
He could do that. So, all right. So Casey Kasem, who we talked about, you cannot talk about legendary DJs without talking about Casey Kasem. Probably has the most famous voice of any DJ. But he's had bad days. He gets a little angry, especially if he's working with a crew that is kind of dumb. So this is kind of a legendary piece of tape with Casey not happy about the segue that he has to do on American Top 40.
We're up to our long-distance dedication, and this one is about kids and pets and a situation that we can all understand, whether we have kids or pets or neither. It's from a man in Cincinnati, Ohio, and here's what he writes. Dear Casey, this may seem to be a strange dedication request, but I'm quite sincere, and it'll mean a lot if you play it. Recently, there was a death in our family. He was a little dog named Snuggles, but he was most certainly a part of... Let's go start again. From coming out of the record. Play the record, okay? Please. See, when you come out of those up-tempo goddamn numbers, man, it's impossible to make those transitions. And then you got to go into somebody dying. You know, they do this to me all the time. I don't know what the hell they do it for, but goddamn it, if we can't come out of a slow record, I don't understand it. Is Don on the phone? Okay, I want a goddamn concerted effort to come out of a record that isn't a up-tempo record every time I do a goddamn death dedication.
It's classic. That's absolute classic. Casey Kasem, man. Legend. Bruce Morrow. Cousin Brucey was a dominant figure in New York radio. New York's WABC Music Radio 77 was the home of many legendary DJs, but the most famous is probably Cousin Brucey, the master of the evening shift. Morrow is still active as a host of an oldie show at Sirius XM Satellite Radio, and he is in the National Hall of Fame as well. How about Jocko Henderson? Henderson traveled between New York and Philadelphia to do his energetic shows. The Ace from Outer Space, a pioneering African-American DJ, was known for his rhythmic patter and buttery baritone, and tireless enough to do mornings in New York and afternoons in Philly. Boy, that's some travel right there. That's some dedication to your craft. You're going from New York to Philly. Wow. Robert W. Morgan. Robert W. Morgan was one of Los Angeles' highest-rated DJs. Along with the real Don Steele, Morgan was perhaps the most famous of Boss Radio KHJ's lineup of stars in Los Angeles. His morning show was the top-rated one in town throughout the late 60s, and he remained a dominant personality after the AM Top 40 era ended. He is in the radio National Radio Hall of Fame. Big Daddy Tom Donahue. Donahue wrote a critique of Top 40, then changed radio with Freeform FM. Originally a Top 40 personality, Donahue was among the first to see the possibilities of the FM band. His San Francisco station KMPX is considered the first freeform radio station in the United States, the kind of station that would play the long album cuts and non-hits that were suddenly earning a following. Big Daddy Tom Donahue. Kid Leo. Kid Leo was a primary reason for Cleveland's reputation as a great music city. The Kid, a.k.a. Lawrence James Tragliante, is credited with making Cleveland's WMMS-FM into one of the leading AOR stations in the country. AOR is album-oriented rock. Stations in the country willingly playing new bands and giving support to such mainstays as Bruce Springsteen and the Pretenders. He's now the program director at Little Steven's Underground Garage on Sirius. Scott Shannon. Scott Shannon, though known as a voice, he is also Sean Hannity's announcer. He is perhaps most influential for developing the morning zoo style that dominates morning radio throughout the country. He worked in Washington, Atlanta, New York, and Los Angeles, and he's in the National Radio Hall of Fame. And then Howard Stern. Howard Stern's move to satellite radio brought in millions of listeners. Even though he doesn't play much music, the self-described king of all media developed his persona as a DJ in Hartford, Connecticut, Detroit, Washington, and finally New York. He's probably the most distinctive and certainly unique radio personality of the last 25 years, and he's in the National Radio Hall of Fame. Yeah, Howard's a legend. He knows it.
Yeah, he certainly knows how to flaunt it.
Yes.
It's always fun to listen to him do it, too.
Yeah. And I love both the book and the movie Private Parts. It's a little sad because, you know, he and his first wife ended up getting divorced.
Right.
And the whole movie, and especially the movie is a love letter to his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a little sad looking back at it and going, oh, man. But still, it's great. And they're a great band. Paul Giamatti as Pig Vomit. I don't even know what to say. So, all right. Well, there you go. Some great DJs. Hey, listen, we've got the news coming up, and we're going to continue with the show, and we are going to talk about some real demands that celebrities have behind scenes. So we're going to find out how spoiled and what some of the most ridiculous demands that celebrities make behind the scenes. And we'll do that after the news, which is coming up next.
And if California slides into the ocean, like the mystics in statistics say it will. I predict this motel will be standing until I pay my bill. What? Don't the sun look at me?
Ah, yes. Nick DiGilio here, live in the Skyline Studio. The Nick DiGilio Show continues, as it always does, every weekday morning. We're here till 4 a.m. I'm your host, Nick DiGilio. Tom Hush is the producer. We're the ones that are keeping you company till 4. 4 o'clock, we go over to Bradley Place, where our good friends over at the Channel 9 Early Morning News will talk to you for an hour. And then Bob Surratt at 5 o'clock for your morning drive. Stay tuned right here on 720 WGN as everything continues. All right. That's Two for Tuesday continues. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man, Two for Tuesday. Every weekday morning, you choose the songs that we play coming back from break and news. And we have a different theme every morning. And so this morning, when you call in or send in your request, the theme is Two for Tuesday. That means one artist, two songs, and we'll play those two songs by that one artist as part of the bump music of the morning. All right, 312-981-7200. We have some, we know that Hollywood is an interesting place. And we know that celebrities, you know, can be interesting and sometimes demanding. And when you become a celebrity, sometimes people think when you're a celebrity that the rules don't really apply and that you can make some weird or kind of unpopular or just strange demands that people in the normal sector, you know, like normal people who are not celebrities, won't make or wouldn't even attempt to try and request. But we know some of the Hollywood celebrities. And I don't know if you've heard about some crazy demands that celebrities have had in the past, but you want to share them. I would love to hear from you because we're going to talk about that. Some weird and bizarre and sometimes outrageous demands that celebrities want and request simply because they're celebrities and they can do that. So which ones do you remember? Which stories do you recall? 312-981-7200. That's the phone number for talk and text. 312-981-7200. Okay. Let's see. Let's talk about some of these. So here's one about Liam Neeson's. Liam Neeson, aware that his Irish accent had been made fun of in a Family Guy episode, agreed to star in Seth MacFarlane's A Million Ways to Die in the West on one condition, that he was allowed to play a cowboy with an Irish accent. I did not know that. That movie, by the way, is terrible. A Million Ways to Die in the West. That is a terrible movie. I remember when I saw it, I just couldn't believe how bad it was. So, but Liam Neeson seems like the kind of guy that has a good sense of humor about stuff. I mean, that you know, if you want proof, just watch that clip of him in the office with Stephen Merchant and Ricky Gervais on Life is Short, where he comes in to the office while they're talking with Warwick Davis. Life is Short is this show about Warwick Davis, who is a dwarf who was in movies like Willow and Return of the Jedi and stuff. And it's this sort of docu-comedy that Ricky Gervais is known for writing and directing and appearing in. And he plays himself. Warwick Davis plays himself. Stephen Merchant plays himself. And Warwick Davis is in the office having a meeting with Ricky Gervais about, you know, some projects that he might want to do or be interested in. And Liam Neeson just walks into the office. And he walks into the office and tells Stephen Merchant and Ricky Gervais that he'd like to do improv now. He wants to do comedy. And Liam Neeson, not known for his work in comedy, proceeds to want to do some improvisation with Ricky and Stephen Merchant. And the result is truly one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. And you can find it online. It's a clip from a show called Life is Short. And if you just Google Liam Neeson, Life is Short, you need to watch this clip because it is really seriously one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. So that proves Liam Neeson does have a good sense of humor, which kind of showed in this little thing that he said where he wanted to play cowboy with an Irish accent. So, all right, let's see. Here's the next one. How about this one? The crew of the movie Mother built Jennifer Lawrence a quote-unquote Kardashian tent so that she could de-stress. It had gumballs, it was plastered with Kardashian pictures, and it looped Keeping Up the Kardashians on TV. She called it my happy place.
I mean, you got to have...
Listen.
In Mother, you got to have a happy place.
Listen, man. Look, she's admitted that she's obsessed with the Kardashians and the Kardashian show. It makes her, it takes, you know, it just takes her mind off of everything and she just watches it.
Sure.
If you've never seen the movie Mother, then you probably think, well, that's just weird. But if you have seen the movie Mother and you see what Jennifer Lawrence had to go through making that movie, she absolutely needed a happy place. And I don't blame her at all. I don't blame her at all. I mean, that's an exhausting and terrifying performance. And some of the stuff that she goes through as an actress and as that character in Mother, especially being put through by your boyfriend at the time, because Darren Aronofsky, the director of that movie, mm-hmm. they were dating when they made that movie.
I just, you know, I find the Kardashians to be a stressful and terrifying family, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
like
everybody's got their own thing.
Out of frying pan into the fire.
Well, she likes the Kardashians.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I'll be real. I was really sick last year at one point, and I just watched Keeping Up with the Kardashians.
I've never seen a full episode.
I'm not going to lie. First couple seasons, not too bad. Pretty funny. Because they're just bonkers, and then they get really rich. They were rich before it, then they get really rich.
Yeah,
she marries Kanye West,
right?
And all that starts happening. So,
well, yeah, I'm just trying to think what I would want on a loop.
Yeah, what show would relax you?
Gilmore Girls.
I could see that.
Gilmore Girls.
Put Gilmore Girls on a loop. You're sick.
Seinfeld.
I would want something. I don't know. I'd probably go Gilmore Girls.
Yeah, well, Gilmore
Something
Girls
that's
is
just like cozy.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And Gilmore Girls is, but you know, Seinfeld makes me laugh.
That's true.
So,
The Price is Right.
Oh, I love The Price is Right.
On The Price is Right.
No, you know what? On an endless loop, the yodeling dude. Cliffhangers. I would want nothing but cliffhangers. Yodeling dude. That just brings me joy, man. When I watch The Price is Right and Cliffhangers comes on and the yodeling dude comes on, I'm just like, yes!
And it falls off.
Yeah.
I've always been more of a bit of a Plinko guy.
I love Plinko.
Who doesn't love Plinko?
I love Plinko. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Here's Ike on WGN. Go ahead, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going with you, man?
All right.
Yeah, I got a very interesting story for you. Remember I told you that Beverly Hills Cop was originally supposed to be Cobra with Sylvester Stallone?
Yes.
I'm not sure if the story is true or not, and it would be hilarious if it was, but I heard one of the reasons he quit is because he was in his trailer and they didn't like the orange juice they were serving. He didn't like the orange juice they were serving him.
I wouldn't be surprised by that. I wouldn't be surprised if Stallone quit because of that. I wouldn't be surprised. Okay, thanks, Ike.
Okay.
All right. That doesn't sound like a far stretch, right?
No, Stallone would do that.
Yeah, I don't like the orange juice. I'm leaving.
I'm Rocky.
I can do whatever I want. Okay. All right. Let's continue. I've got many more of these. And if you know of any celebrity demands that you think are ridiculous that you've heard about, 312-981-7200. The show continues. Nick DiGilio here as the show continues on a Tuesday morning here till 4 a.m. Tom Hush is the producer and I am your host, and we are talking about weird and bizarre real demands that celebrities have made behind the scenes. If you know of any of these stories and you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Two for Tuesday is continuing. You request it. One artist, two songs. We play them. Who was that?
That was the Jeff Healey Band.
Yes.
With The Night Comes Falling from the Sky, and that's coming to us from Andy.
Jeff Healey, star of Roadhouse.
Yep. And he's sitting there playing his guitar on his lap.
Yep. Blind jamming guitarist.
Oh, he's blind?
Jeff Healey's blind, man.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Well, he's passed away since,
yeah.
but he was blind.
I did not know
that. They make reference to it in the movie, man.
Well, I'm not exactly watching Roadhouse.
What?
What do you want from me?
What?
What? What do you mean?
What? Roadhouse is a bi-monthly movie.
Come on.
No! Come on. You kidding? Roadhouse is a classic. I love that movie, man.
I'm sure you do.
Sam Elliott, come on.
John Doe.
Swayze. You can't go wrong with that movie.
All right.
All right. So we're talking about celebrity demands. Sam sends in a text. You can, too, at 312-981-7200. It's also the talk line. Van Halen and the No Brown M&Ms. Now, see, that's not true. You know the story behind this, right?
Well, wasn't it in their it was in their tour rider, right?
Yeah.
That they No Brown, they wanted a jar or something.
They said no. They had you had to remove all the brown M&Ms. They wanted a big jar of M&Ms, but all the brown M&Ms had to be removed.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't care about brown M&Ms.
No.
They wanted to make sure people were reading the contract.
Yeah, read the tour rider.
That's why they put it in there. That's exactly, they didn't care. They thought of the most ridiculous thing that they could possibly demand or think of just to make sure that people were, you know, the people that they were dealing with, the venues, you know, the producers, mm-hmm. were actually reading the contract and reading the rider.
Well, and the big thing is that, especially with a band like Van Halen, there's a lot of pyrotechnics going on. There's a lot of light stuff, a lot of really important infrastructural stuff. So if the venue is not reading that properly, people get killed. People get maimed.
Yep. So, all right, how about this one? Aretha Franklin got paid in cash. A holdover from early in her career when ripping off black performers was extremely common, Franklin began demanding payment upfront in cash or she would not perform. She would carry the cash in her purse and often take her purse on stage with her. She kept this policy for her whole career. You know who else did the same thing?
Chuck Berry.
Chuck Berry.
Mm-hmm.
He would demand to be paid in cash. He would walk in. He'd walk in with a guitar case. He would ask for an envelope full of money. He'd walk in like 2 minutes before the gig. They would have to provide the band, who he'd never worked with before. He didn't rehearse with. Because it's Chuck Berry songs. You know, so he'd walk in, demand the cash in an envelope. He would count the cash, take his guitar out, put the money in the guitar case, lock the guitar case, go on stage, do the show, 90 minutes, end the show, walk off the stage, put the guitar in the guitar case, get up, leave. That's what Chuck Berry would do all the time. My friend saw him at Cubby Bear. This was years ago, and he pulled up in a Cadillac in front at the car. If you can imagine this, like a 70s Cadillac, a beautiful, big, fat caddy, pulls up there at Clark and Addison, right there on the corner, gets out of the car, leaves the car there, just leaves it there, gets out of the car, guitar case in hand, walks in through the front door of the Cubby Bear. Everybody's like just looking. Like, is that guy, what is going on? That's Chuck Berry. Walks all the way back to the backstage area, goes backstage, presumably gets the envelope of money, gets his guitar, comes out on stage, says like two words to the audience, looks at the band and says, follow my lead. He counts off the next song, boom. Does 90 minutes, takes off his guitar, walks backstage, presumably counting his money or whatever, puts it away, and then he walks right back through the crowd outside into this Cadillac and drives away.
That's Chuck for you. That's your boy Chuck Berry.
The image of that is Chuck Berry just parking on Addison and Clark, getting out, walking in, doing a gig, walking out, getting back in the car and driving away.
Yeah. What are you gonna do? Give him a ticket? You see a Cadillac like that?
You can't give Chuck Berry a ticket.
I guarantee he would tear it up.
Oh, pfft.
Just be like, whatever.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, I don't care. Yeah, just be like, whatever. Chuck Berry. I helped invent rock and roll. You're welcome.
Yeah, I just love that. I mean, my friend was like, and it was a great. He said it was a great show too. Like, it was a great, great show. Like, he performed for 90 minutes, but it was a solid 90. Like, he never went beyond 90. Got off stage, got his cash, walked out to his Cadillac, drove away.
Well, let's be honest. What would a 2-hour Chuck Berry concert even be like? Boring, honestly. Yeah. You get all those songs. They're tight.
Yeah,
they're fun. They're quick, so, and then it's done. You've had your experience.
So, but yeah, I mean, and again, like this Aretha Franklin tidbit that we were talking about, that's from the early days when black performers got ripped off.
Oh, no doubt.
So Chuck Berry was like, no, you give me my money up front, man. I'm not performing unless I get paid. Can't blame them for that, getting ripped off early in their career like that. Yeah. And these are two legends, Aretha Franklin, Chuck Berry, getting ripped off. Please. All right, how about this? Whenever Queen were feeling a bit annoyed before a show, they would demand their opening act keep down the noise so that they could get ready without distractions.
Come on.
So they demand Thin Lizzy be quiet?
I guess so.
On that legendary tour, Thin Lizzy opening for for Queen?
I'm guessing Thin Lizzy just turned it up a little bit louder just to bother him. But oh, who knows?
Yeah. Don't be messing with Phil Lynott.
I don't care who you are.
No, you don't do that. All right. What does Motor City Madman Ted Nugent require in his dressing room?
A buffalo.
I didn't think you... I bet you didn't expect to see the effing buffalo! Rode out on a buffalo in the House of Blues, and that's not a joke. A live, giant buffalo in the House of Blues, on that stage in the House of Blues. Crapping all over the stage, just ridiculous. No, he demands man-sized Kleenex. That's on his rider. Man-sized Kleenex.
As opposed to what, like bird-sized?
I don't know.
Ant-sized?
He wants man-sized Kleenex.
For his man-sized nose.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah.
I would just get a box of regular Kleenex, writing Sharpie "man" on it.
Just write "man." Get him a box of lotion coated puffs.
Yeah,
just because he would never use that because he's Nugent.
Kiss my grist, Ted Nugent.
I'm gonna blow my nose with deer skin.
I won't blow my nose with anything I didn't kill.
That's right. My nose is stuffed up. I stick a gun up it and blow a bullet into my head. All right, here's the next little tidbit. Kirk Cameron insists on only kissing his real-life wife. So the kiss scene in Fireproof had to be shot in silhouette in order to swap the actress in the film, Erin Abethia, for Cameron's real wife, Chelsea Noble. So he won't kiss anybody but his real-life wife. So they have to swap out actresses and shoot it in the dark.
So this is Kirk Cameron, like growing pains Kirk Cameron.
Yeah. Are you aware of this guy's religious beliefs?
Well, yeah. I know he did a movie not too long ago called Kirk Cameron Saving Christmas, I want to say.
Oh, yeah. And he's got a very strong, I don't want to misquote what religion he follows. And, but it's a religion that believes that the world is going to end, that has very, very, very strict rules that you have to adhere to. And so this is part of that. Like, he can't kiss anybody but his wife.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, he was in the Left Behind movies as well.
That's what I'm saying. Those are, he's in the Left, he's, you know, so.
Well, there you go.
All right, Kirk Cameron.
Nerd.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on here. We're going to continue. It's the Nick DiGilio Show on 720 WGN. Let me give you the weather real quick, and then we'll continue. Let's see. The temperatures today, this morning, will be in the mid-teens to low 20s at sunrise. Then it'll climb up to the mid-20s in the outlying suburbs and 30 in the city area. Upper teens at night, low 20s, and then steadily rising overnight. Windy and milder tomorrow. We've got some boost in temperatures up to the mid-30s. Clouds were lower at night, leading to a chance of a light mixed precip. For Thursday, a disturbance over the plains will likely get us some mixed precipitation. Temperatures will climb to the mid-30s, and we'll see some wet snow in a mix likely overnight, and the lows will hover around freezing. Wet snow across the area on Friday. Snow may be mixed with rain at times. Slushy accumulations likely, and then on Saturday, wet snow. Or regular snow will just linger in the morning. We'll see some sun in the afternoon. Temperatures will rise to the mid to upper 30s. 16 degrees at O'Hare, 19 at Midway, 22 at the lakefront. All right. We will continue with more weird requests and demands from celebrities. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 on the Nick DiGilio Show on 720 WGN.
Gypsy woman told my mother before I was born. You got a boy child coming, ain't gonna be a son of a gun. Gonna make pretty women.
Yeah, Jeff Healy was good, man. He was good. How you doing? Nick DiGilio Show continues here on a Tuesday morning. Two for Tuesday is wrapping up. That's a twofer from Jeff Healy. And if you would like to join us, we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. We're here on 720 WGN. It's the Nick DeGiglio Show. Tom Hush is my producer, and we are talking about weird and sometimes bizarre real demands that celebrities have made behind the scenes. And if you know of any, 312-981-7200. All right, you ready for this next one, Tom?
Okay.
In all Goldfinger promotional material, Sean Connery demanded that his name be 25% bigger than all other cast members.
Good.
Now, see, now that doesn't, you know, like the whole who gets top billing thing has been, that's been an issue with a lot. I mean, if you've got like two or three big stars in a movie, you know, it's written into contracts who's, what name is bigger, what name goes on top. Look up something for me. IMDb Towering Inferno, because I'm curious to know who's got top billing in that, because it's either Paul Newman or Steve McQueen, and at the time both of them were like two of the biggest stars in the world, Paul Newman and Steve McQueen. So I my guess is Paul Newman got top billing for Towering Inferno, and that probably took a lot of negotiation just to get, you know, to get that down.
Well, it was McQueen, Newman, and William Holden wanted top billing.
Mm-hmm.
Holden was refused, and it was kind of between McQueen and Newman. So to provide dual top billing, the credits were arranged diagonally. The lengths that people will go to.
Yeah, there it is. William Holden. How did William Holden think he was going to get top billing over McQueen and Paul Newman at that time? What was that movie, 74? 1974?
Yeah, 1974.
Yeah.
December of 1974.
Yeah, no. Those guys were the two biggest stars on Earth in 1974. I mean, William Holden, obviously a legendary actor, but he's not going to draw a crowd like Steve McQueen and Paul Newman would.
And speaking of rivalries between actors, James Russo and David Caruso on China Girl. You ever seen China Girl?
Yeah.
By Abel Ferrara?
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently, they both hated each other. And would constantly be trying to one-up one another.
Or screw up their takes and stuff?
Yeah. And then David Caruso, I believe, was offered King of New York.
That's also Abel Ferrara.
Yeah, also Abel Ferrara. And or it was either him or James Russo. One of them was offered King of New York. I want to say it was probably James Russo. And he turned it down. And when Abel Ferrara asked why, he said that he read the script and he's like, I am not letting David Caruso spit in my face. That is not going to happen.
Yeah, it was Russo because Caruso's in it.
Yeah.
And so Caruso is great in King of New York.
So it was, yeah, James Russo. He's like, I'm not going to let David Caruso spit in my face. No way is that
James Russo.
I don't know. Why has that become a thing that you're acting? It's not really David Caruso spitting in your face.
Right.
But.
Okay. Well. But that's a real. I mean, that's real though, man. I mean, you know, there's a real competitive nature in Hollywood. It's like who's going to have their name bigger on the credits and who's going to be first and all that stuff.
Petty.
Do you know the only John Carpenter movie that does not have John Carpenter's on the title?
Starman.
Nope.
No, that's got it. Memoirs of an Invisible Man.
Nope. Memoirs of an Invisible Man, believe it or not. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe it is Memoirs. Because for those people who might not know, all of John Carpenter's movies have, they're possessive. It's like John Carpenter's Halloween, John Carpenter's The Fog. That's how all of the credits read, except for one movie. Run down the, you have John Carpenter up there?
Yeah, I'm going to pull him up here.
Maybe it is Memoirs. But I'm trying to think. But I know there's only one movie that doesn't have the possessive John Carpenter's above the title. Oh, there's only one. And now I can't think of it. It's not Village of the Damned. I think it's not. I think it's Village of the Damned. Because you would think something like that. So I can't. I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out. Well, because all of them still go. Like, if you look them up, they're still just referred to as Halloween, even though on the poster.
No, I know. But just go, I mean, if you hit the right, if you hit the title, I might be able to guess. I think it might be a Memoirs of an Invisible Man. It might be right around that time.
So you've got Dark Star.
Of course, no.
Assault on Precinct 13.
Yes.
Halloween, yes. The Fog, Escape yes. from New York, yes. The Thing,
yep.
Christine,
yep.
Starman,
yep.
Big Trouble,
yep.
Prince of Darkness,
yep.
They Live,
yep.
Memoirs of an Invisible Man.
Now, that might be it, but go ahead.
Mouth of Madness, Village of the Damned, Escape yep. from L.A., Vampires, Ghosts of Mars, and The Ward.
It's Memoirs.
There you go.
No, it's John Carpenter's Ward. Have you seen The Ward?
Yeah, I didn't particularly like it.
Oh, man, I like it. I think it's great.
There you go.
I think it's great. But yeah, it's Memoirs. It's the Chevy Chase comedy, Memoirs of an Invisible Man. It's the only movie he made where he doesn't have it. It's possessive. All right, how about this little celebrity demand? Samuel L. Jackson loves golf. You know that, right? He's like a golf fanatic.
I did not know that, actually.
Well, he made some movie in Scotland where all he did was play golf. He wore a kilt. It was like some action movie where he wore a kilt and he played golf. I mean, it's going to be hard to find because his credits, he's got 65,000 credits. But it's like, so if you just Google Samuel L. Jackson kilt, it was like an action movie. Like he was a spy or something, but there was a lot of golf in it. And the reason why he made it was because he wanted to go to Scotland and play golf.
Is it the 51st state?
I don't know. What's
Well, I mean, Robert Carlyle's in it, so...
I don't know. It might be. All I know is that he made a movie, and he didn't like the script. He hated the script. He did it just so he could go to Scotland and golf for like a month and a half. And then in the movie, he plays like a spy or something, and he wears a kilt.
Yeah, it's the 51st state.
Okay. What's the plot? Does it have the plot?
Yeah. The story of Elmo McElroy, Samuel L.
That's his character's name in the movie?
Yeah, Elmo McElroy. Or McElroy.
McElroy. I think it would be McElroy, yeah.
McElroy. a streetwise American master chemist who heads to... who heads to England to set up his last big deal, to introduce a new designer drug to the European market. McElroy soon becomes embroiled in a web of double dealing as he's escorted around Liverpool's underworld and rave scene by a rabid local hood, Felix D'Souza, played by Robert Carlyle, who hates all things American.
That is hilarious.
Came out in 2002.
Yeah. It says, in fact, he loves golf so much that he has the option to go golfing twice a week, included in all of his film contracts. He can go at least twice a week.
Engineer Bob says that Meatloaf is also in that movie.
Meatloaf is in that 51st State movie.
Yeah, Mr. Loaf.
Mr. Loaf, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Not only does Jack White insist on one bowl of fresh, chunky, homemade guacamole in his dressing room, he even provides the handy recipe to follow.
Yeah, I remember when that story broke. I remember. People really wanted to give him a lot of guff for it, but it's the writer thing.
Yeah.
You talk to any massive celebrity, and even Jack White, I wouldn't call a massive celebrity even when the White Stripes are super popular.
Yeah.
But you talk to anybody who's embarking on that level of touring, they have ridiculous things in the writer.
For real, yeah.
For real.
And we've already pointed out that the Van Halen thing was done on purpose.
Yeah.
Chunky guacamole.
There was, when the story broke, there was a whole thing where people, you know, they had the recipe. So people were like, okay, we're going to see how good this guacamole actually is.
So people were just making the guacamole?
Apparently it wasn't that great.
Yeah. Ben Affleck, you ready for this one?
Mm-hmm.
Ben Affleck, a big fan of the Red Sox. No, is he?
No.
No.
Wait, is he from Boston? I don't know.
You're joking, right?
Yes.
Okay. I was going to say. I was just going to make sure. I just wanted to make sure.
The star and director of The Town
right.
doesn't like Boston.
Right, right, right. Yeah. The guy who wrote, what's the smart guy with the mop movie with him and Matt Damon? What's the name of that? Good Will Hunting.
I almost said Forrest Gump.
No.
Yeah, Good Will Hunting, smart guy with a mop.
So Ben Affleck, big fan of the Red Sox, wasted production time during the filming of Gone Girl because he didn't want to wear a Yankees hat in one of the scenes. He described it as a one-man riot against the Yankees.
Yeah, I'm sure David Fincher was thrilled. One of the most meticulous directors in Hollywood.
Yeah, there's a reason. I'm assuming he probably had 47,000 specific reasons why he should be wearing a New York Yankees hat, and exactly how, you know, at what degree he should be wearing it, considering how detailed and crazy David Fincher is. Queen Latifah has a no death scenes clause in her movie contracts. She started asking for this when she realized that being killed off meant she couldn't appear in any sequels. What?
And on the opposite point, you've got Sean Bean.
He gets killed in everything.
He gets killed in almost everything because he hates doing sequels.
Yeah.
He wants to be able to do his London theater career, and which is, I think, very admirable. He
likes, of course, yeah. No, I like Sean Bean. I think he's great.
Yeah.
But Queen Latifah, now, since she asked for it, has she ever been in a movie where she gets killed? Like, before she started putting that stipulation into her contract, are there any movies, like, an early part of her career where she gets killed? Like, Set It Off? Does she get killed in Set It Off?
I don't know.
I mean, I haven't seen Set It Off in years, but there's a possibility. It's a crime movie, you know? It's a heist movie. There's guns and stuff in it. All right, let me give you the weather, and then we'll continue with this. We only get one Neil Young song. Two for Tuesday. That's the theme. Every morning and every night on the show, you request all the music that we play coming back from commercials and news. And we have a different theme every morning. And Tuesday is Two for Tuesday. But we're not going to be able to hear two Neil Young songs because this is our last break before the end of the show. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's Nick DiGilio. Show continues. Tom Hush is the producer. I am your host. And we are talking about some real and bizarre demands that celebrities have behind the scenes. 262 sent in a text, 312-981-7200. It says, how about when Steve Harvey came out with a letter telling his staff to not to make eye contact with him and to just keep walking past? And then the letter was leaked out to the public. Yeah, that was here in Chicago.
Yep. Yep.
It was here in Chicago. I knew people worked on that staff.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. 807 said, Alice Cooper must golf wherever he plays. Yeah, he's another one who's a golf nut. I'd like to see Alice Cooper and Samuel L. Jackson golfing together, both in kilts. What's his name? Elmo McAvoy? What was it?
Elmo McElroy.
All right. Are you ready for some more? This is a weird one. Peter Sellers. This involves Peter Sellers. Peter Sellers, you know, unusual dude, by all accounts. How about this? Peter Sellers wouldn't let anyone wear green or purple around him. The Pink Panther actor was very superstitious of the two colors and would storm off set if a member of the production crew were dressed in either hue. Sellers even had people search rooms he would stay in to make sure that there wasn't anything resembling green or purple. What's the significance? I've never heard. Is purple and green, are they bad luck?
I don't know. They represent the Hulk? Incredible Hulk?
And Prince.
Huh.
Christina Aguilera really hates traffic. Under no circumstances are the vehicles to be allowed to encounter any delays due to traffic, is in her rider. Her tour rider requires a police escort where under no circumstances will she be allowed to encounter any delays.
How is that even possible?
I don't know. Police escort, that means, you know, that means that the traffic's got to get out of the way.
Yeah, I guess so.
You got to pull to the side, or you got to get off the road.
That's so beyond the pale.
It is. I agree. CeeLo Green's backstage demands include red M&Ms and vodka.
Breakfast of Champions.
Whatever happened to CeeLo Green?
He's still around.
Yeah?
I mean, I think the last thing I saw him do was he painted himself completely gold.
Did he?
For like an award show. Yeah, he looked kind of like a big gold robot.
Yeah.
Something like that.
What was his crazy was his big Right? Yeah, was it Crazy?
Him and Danger Mouse did Crazy. Well, then he had that F.U. song, Forget You.
Oh, yeah.
That was everywhere.
It was everywhere. I love that song. Did you ever see the viral video that leaked where a woman doing sign language was signing along with Forget You?
No.
But it was the uncensored version?
No.
I think it's... I'm not sure... she's just sign languaging, and I think she might be in a room full of deaf people, so she's signing for the deaf people what the lyrics were. It's great. It's great. She's like lip syncing along, and she signs, you know, she's doing the signing, and this is the uncensored version. It's not Forget You, it's the actual... I must have watched that. When that song was popular and that video hit the internet, I must have watched it like 50 times. So adorable, and the way she was signing it is fantastic. I'm serious. I watched it constantly. I thought it was so funny.
Yeah. I remember when I became aware of people at concerts and stuff, like they designate and buy, you know, pay people to do that at concerts.
Yeah.
I think it was at Lollapalooza, and they were signing along to Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
It was rad.
Yeah. Saved by the Bell alum Dustin Diamond. How can this guy demand anything?
I don't know. He was popular for maybe 5 years.
Saved by the Bell alum Dustin Diamond, better known as Screech for people who might not know the name, requires a zany amount of beverages at his appearances. His room must have 4 bottles of water, 4 Red Bulls, 2 pints of 2% milk, 2 pints of chocolate milk, 4 20-ounce Pepsi or Coke, and a 6-pack of Michelob Ultra at clubs. So whenever he makes appearances at clubs, I guess that's now. What are you going to hire him to do? That's a lot of liquid.
Yeah. Well, at least he's being responsible with the Michelob Ultra.
Yeah.
Watching those calories.
Who is Grimes?
Grimes was the kind of weird art pop chick that was dating Elon Musk and is now pregnant with his child.
Okay, because I'm looking at her and I don't know who she is.
Yeah, she's a little bit more on the newer end.
Grimes likes playing with cute or fluffy creatures backstage. At one point, her writer asked for a bulldog, a French bulldog, a pug, a Pomeranian, a chinchilla, and a Pekingese. So she's asking for pets to play with at backstage.
Well, I guess boring backstage. You ever been stuck backstage at a show?
I have, actually.
And you didn't wish, like, oh, man, I kind of
wish I had a puppy?
Yeah, I wish I had a puppy here.
No.
Hang out with?
No. How about this? Carrot Top.
No, I don't even.
Carrot Top makes sure someone is reading his rider by requesting a specific picture be painted or drawn with crayons. And then he says the best drawing wins a little something.
That little something is you won't have to talk to Carrot Top.
Remember when Carrot Top was just like skinny and then he got all crazy buffed?
Yeah. I did used to get Carrot Top and Richard Simmons mixed up.
What?
I kind of forgot who was who.
How is that even possible?
I don't know. I just did.
They're not even remotely alike in any way.
They're both very high energy, kind of reddish. Richard Simmons had kind of reddish hair.
No,
right?
Brown.
Oh. Well. You're telling me that Richard Simmons doesn't have a trunk full of increasingly ridiculous props
no.
that he uses for comedy.
He has bad shorts. Embroiled in a sexual assault controversy, it seems Bill Cosby was none too pleased with certain hometown newspapers in 2005. Cosby writer specifically demanded engagements not be advertised in the Philadelphia Inquirer or the Daily News. Tom Cruise pulled some strings to have a fully staffed Scientology tent on the set of War of the Worlds.
Why would he need that? There's already aliens out there for him.
You know, the thing is, like, two of my favorite actors are both Scientologists. Like, I love Tom Cruise. Whenever I hear the Scientologist stuff, I just start going, oh, man.
And Elizabeth Moss.
And Elizabeth Moss.
Yep.
All right.
It's kind of like how, you know, Hollywood, wasn't everybody into, like, Kabbalah or something like that?
Yeah.
Madonna was super into Kabbalah.
Yeah.
They all had the little red ties around their wrist.
While on tour in North America, Adele explicitly forbade serving North American beer. All right. Well, there you go. Celebrities can be demanding. Some of those weren't terrible, right? I mean, some of them weren't that bad. I mean, some were weird. But yeah. But we still have celebrities who demand weird things. So there it is. All right. It is a Tuesday morning, and we've got a show tomorrow. And tomorrow on Tuesday night into Wednesday morning, my old friend, artist and author Dmitry Samarov returns after a long hiatus. We'll talk about a few of his new books, his latest books. He's a writer. He's an artist. He's an all around good guy. And we'll have him on the show, and that'll be tomorrow.